behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And this evening we have with us for the first hour Marvin Lansky, who's a professor of journalism at the University of Texas in Austin and the editor-in-chief of World Magazine, which is a nationally circulated weekly news magazine. But we're going to be talking this evening about his recent book, The Politics of Disaster, Katrina, Big Government, and a New Strategy for Future Crisis. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Hi, I'm glad to be with you.
Well, your book is fascinating, and really it's, you know, of course, as I look back on Katrina, and I'm sure many of our listeners do, and remember the things that we were told there about, certainly about the bands of people who were roaming the streets and the rapes and the murders and, you know, the just the total state of lawlessness that was there. And yet, as you point out in your book, most of what we were told by the mass media at the time really had its basis totally on rumor and very little on facts. So would you like to pick up this story, this whole idea of the politics of disaster?
Well, as far as the massive killings, rapes, those other things that you're referring to, those didn't happen. There were occasional murders, but New Orleans is that type of city. The coroners and others said there was less of that going on that week in New Orleans than during a normal week.
And because you'd always get a couple of murders there every week in New Orleans. And
Yeah. This was actually, by New Orleans standards, a less deadly week.
And how about those stories about the snipers who were shooting at the police, and the police were shooting at the snipers?
Yeah, I mean, there were cars backfiring in that rather hyped-up state of events. Any suspicious noise was reported as snipers, and there were plenty of people from national media outlets who were glad to run with that. It created more sensational news. The problem was, I mean, it wasn't just inaccurate, which many of those reports were, and it wasn't just that they were, it wasn't just that they were neutral in their effect. They actually caused lots of damage because first responders who would have gone in delayed a little bit at times because they figured they needed some protection. The National Guard, before going in, it went in military formation, and that slowed it down by about a day, you know, issuing their bullet-resistant vest and all, and getting all the weapons out and things like that. They thought they were walking into a war zone, and that slowed down the rescue of law-abiding people who just wanted to get out of there.
And, Chris, you really go into the background of the mistakes that were made. There was plenty of credit for everybody making mistakes, weren't there?
Well, yeah, it was so much so much blundering at every level of government that they could all blame each other very effectively and point out realistically where they had gone wrong. But there was so much of that that it really goes beyond personalities, goes beyond questions of incompetence or cowardice by the mayor or other people. You know, what you see here is bureaucracy going crazy. You see a paperocracy where often for legitimate fears of litigation, people being sued if something goes wrong, everyone was very hesitant to proceed unless, in the case of FEMA, for example, doctors had filled out 60-page forms.
And here's doctors who are coming, I mean, hundreds of doctors to give relief, and the first thing they want is a 65-page form filled out, and then they want all sorts of detailed information on them, and delay and delay and delay. People from all over the country wanted to go there and help, and the government and government officials block them. It is, if you have low blood pressure, you want to read this book, it'll get your blood pressure up in very much of a hurry. We'll be right back here in just a few minutes to talk about the politics of disaster. Well, let's go on now. You point out that there were a number of plans, well laid out plans, or fairly good plans, a city plan, a state plan, a federal plan. Could you sort of develop this idea that certainly people had been anticipating a major disaster, at the potential for a major disaster in this area that was actually built below the level of the lakes and below the water level. So could you pick up the idea and then the story of the levees and why they weren't in good repair?
Well, New Orleans itself is a bowl, essentially. It's below sea level, and in all kinds of situations, there's going to be some flooding, sometimes a lot of flooding. There's a novelist, James Lee Burke, who wrote about New Orleans as an insane asylum built on a sponge. You know, it's that type of city, and it's that type of environment. It's below sea level. You're going to have problems. The way you stop some of those problems from occurring is by having levees that are strong enough, high enough, built of not dirt but cement, so that they can hold back the floodwaters that are going to try to pour into that bowl. The problem is you had all these different levee groups that sometimes paid attention to everything other than the condition of the levees. In fact, they paid attention to casinos that they were getting in to try to bring in some revenue. The meetings of some of these levee boards where the levees failed, you look at the minutes of them in the 2 years before Katrina, and they're largely filled with discussions of how they're going to get more people out to the casinos, what they're going to do as far as parking and pavement and so forth. You know, how, as one official put it, you know, how people can have fun. So you had the emphasis on fun, and you didn't have the emphasis on saving lives and doing the basic things to keep that bowl from filling up with water.
And, of course, one of the points that you made was that there really was a lot of money there for repair of the levees, and it was being siphoned off into all sorts of other things.
Yeah. It's not that there weren't appropriations, and we heard some of that. Gee, if only more money had been appropriated. The money was appropriated, but as you say, it was siphoned off, and there was just gross negligence, and that seems to be part of the tradition of Louisiana politics. There's a lot of incompetence, there's a lot of graft, a lot of corruption, and just a lot of big easy stuff. Say, we'll get by somehow. Let's have some fun.
Yeah, but of course, this time, why, there was no way to get by. There was a catastrophe that was in the making, and even the mayor, you pointed out, the mayor did not order a mandatory evacuation of the city because he was afraid the hotels would be mad at him.
That's right. He very much feared litigation. What happens if I order the mandatory evacuation and people get hurt along the way? What happens if they get trapped in traffic jams and they sue me for something or other? What happens if the hotels sue me for losing business, the restaurants, and so forth?
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest, of course, is Professor Marvin Lansky. We're talking about what happened in New Orleans. And of course, Mayor Nagin had put out a voluntary evacuation. We're about 80% of the population of New Orleans left, but there was 20% left. Now, the mayor's responsibility was to have ordered a mandatory evacuation, but he didn't order a mandatory evacuation, at least not until it was too late. And could you mind repeating what you were just saying as to why he didn't order a mandatory evacuation when he should have?
Yeah, he didn't order a mandatory evacuation. He said at the time and later on emphasized that he was fearful of being sued by the hotels and by the restaurants, and perhaps by other people who would be inconvenienced and would be mad at him.
And he was afraid that the hotels and the other people would be angry with him if he ordered a mandatory and forced everybody out of the city. And so he didn't do it, and of course, it leaves everything open for catastrophe. So then, of course, you've got all these people, you know, thousands and thousands of people there, And some of them, of course, go to the Superdome, I think, 28,000 people. But then what about the convention center? Why did they send people to the convention center?
Well, they weren't planning to. The Superdome was in the plans, and that's an object of controversy in and of itself. There were buses available to get people out of town, and they just sat there until they were waterlogged. There were trains. Amtrak actually was sending some equipment out of New Orleans, and made available 700 seats on a train and talked to the city officials repeatedly saying, why don't you get some people on the train? So the official said no. So just a lot of negligence and incompetence and so forth. The plan was for a lot of people to go to the Superdome, and the idea was that they would be able to have refuge there and safe. Now, if Katrina hadn't ticked a little bit to the east, if it had really come in as a Category 5 storm, it might have blown the roof right off the Superdome. The walls would have come crashing down. I mean, then you would have had a huge number of casualties. So gross irresponsibility on the part of people to be talking about the Superdome and all. But, you know, it was part of the sense that it won't happen in my watch. They'd had false alarms before the previous year. A lot of people had gotten out of town and nothing much happened. So they figured, some people figured, hey, we'll just sit this one out, and the mayor figured, well, maybe it'll just head in some other direction and we won't have this problem. So it was all this hoping, rather than taking responsibility, it was just hoping that somehow they would avoid having to act like adults.
And you commented that the people were told to go to the Superdome and to take water and food with them. And so many people went to the Superdome and didn't take any water or food. And then the National Guard came in with water and food for 15,000 people for 3 days. But there were 28,000 people there, and they were there a lot longer. And so pretty soon food and water are running out. It's pretty chaotic, isn't it?
Right. The people were running out of that. And a lot of people who went to the Superdome actually went from areas that weren't flooded. But they went because they didn't have any food or water in their own homes. They didn't take the basic precaution of having 3 days or maybe a week of supplies. And that led them into a lot of misery that they could have avoided. And then things got worse as the Superdome filled up and people were diverted over to the convention center where there was absolutely no planning to have that as a refuge. And that just became a grotesque situation with just lots of crud all over the place. The rumors were just flying about all these people have been killed, bodies in the freezer and stuff like that. I mean, that wasn't happening, but it was just a terrible place. It was hot, it was crowded, there wasn't food or water. The people who got stuck there were in really bad shape, and again, it took longer than it should have to evacuate them, in part because so many precautions were being taken because of all the reports of lots of shooting and gang warfare going on.
Which really wasn't going on at all. And so
right.
And so here comes the Red Cross, and they've got all sorts of food and water and supplies, and they want to help. And what happens to the Red Cross when they want to come in and help all these people, you know, trapped there at the convention center and even those there at the Superdome?
Yeah, and the city officials are saying, well, no, don't come in here. In fact, we're not going to allow you to come in because we are getting these people out, and if you bring these supplies to the Superdome, that just means more people will come here. We don't want them to come here. We're working to get them out of the city. But again, there was a delay of a couple of days, and there were people who were in very bad shape because the Red Cross and the city officials were fighting at that point.
And, of course, then the National Guard wants to bring in the helicopters to rescue the people on the roof. And what happens?
Well, again, there were delays there. There were, originally, FEMA, and when you had the National Guard with helicopters, but you had lots of other groups with helicopters, including the Coast Guard and some naval forces and so forth. Amazingly, on Monday, FEMA and officials were saying, don't come, we don't want help, stay home. They were telling first responders, don't come unless we ask you to come. There would have been, it ended up with about 1,500 people being killed. There probably would have been 10,000 if it hadn't been for all the responders who ignored what FEMA were saying and came anyway. Kayaks and canoes and all kinds of boats. They came and rescued people at a time when a lot of people otherwise would have drowned.
In fact, you commented of one place in the book where, FEMA is saying you can't take those supplies and you don't have the right paperwork filled out, and a couple of people just did it anyway, violated the law, violated everything, and got the supplies to the people who needed them.
Yeah, you had to smuggle food in. One of our reporters from World Magazine apparently was a law-abiding person, so he was stopped all over the place. But he wasn't bringing in supplies. There were people bringing supplies who refused to be stopped, and they found a way in to help people. So what you have here is a big problem of bureaucracy. You had a paperocracy where people often, for fear of lawsuits, were just filling out paper rather than acting to help people. And then you have these individual volunteers. You had church groups. I mean, the Southern Baptist Relief and Rescue Teams, the Salvation Army, Operation Blessing. A lot of those groups came in. You have businesses like FedEx and Walmart that were really working overtime to get stuff to people. And then you had some the Coast Guard and then some military people coming in. I mean, those are the ones who worked well. The civil government officials, state, local, federal, at every level, failed pretty badly.
Andrews, this was really sort of the basic theme of the book, that if you look at the business came in, they wanted to help. The military did a pretty good job. And some of the church-based groups did a good job. But as far as FEMA and as far as all of these professional bureaucrats are there, they weren't helping. They were, in many cases, they were actually hindering and keeping the relief supplies away. Would that be a fairly good estimate?
Yeah, that's a good summary. There were firefighters, there were paramedics and others who wanted to go to New Orleans, and FEMA diverted them to Atlanta and had them sit through seminars on diversity and sexual harassment and all that type of stuff. And, you know, this was enormously frustrating for the people who came to help and were just sitting in these seminars and then drinking beer at night because they had nothing to do except sit there and fume instead of being able to go to New Orleans and save lives and rescue people.
And, you know, this to me, I remember reading about that. I mean, here you've got these people traveled halfway across the country because they want to help their fellow human beings. And they're required to go to another city and take lectures on sexual harassment? I mean, what sort of madness is that?
Well, it's paperocracy again. See, what happens if, I mean, here's the thinking of a bureaucrat of FEMA. What happens if someone goes in and they, you know, in the process of rescuing people, they engage in some sexual harassment? If we haven't set them down through the seminar, then maybe we could be legally liable. That was their concern.
I mean, the story really is so incredible, you know, when you stop and think of the implications of what happened, and people died because they didn't get off the roofs, and, you know, and here are the people who want to come in with boats and help, and they're being blocked at every turn by government officials. Well, you certainly didn't get a very good feeling, warm feeling about how we can depend upon the government in case there's a national emergency, did you?
No, but the warm feeling do come away where there's towards all these volunteers, these individual people, who sometimes risk their lives and certainly spent weeks of their lives just going there to help people. I mean, it's an incredible story, really, of all the people who volunteered, including people who went there, including others who gave room in their homes, who contributed money. It's a good story about the American people generally. It's a bad story about the functioning of government.
And I think that's really what's so important, is to realize that most people are good people, and there is a tremendous camaraderie in people helping people, even people, as you point out, who had lost everything, and that they were there helping others.
That's right. I mean, there were, and also people in the military, folks whose own homes were submerged, but they were there helping others. You know, there's a lot of warmth out of this, as well as just a cold, bitter wind for the precincts of Washington.
But then, of course, then there's the story of the heroic police chief of New Orleans who's giving out all this false information.
Right.
Would you like to just talk a little bit about him?
Because yeah, I mean, he clearly was exaggerating. I mean, he apologized for it later on. There was just a lot of hysteria around. Now, there was a lack of information. People's cell phones were not working, other communications were down. So people fed on rumors, and instead of looking and vetting gossip to see whether it was really true, the gossip quickly became gospel. People went around telling each other, you know, there were some funny scenes with reporters from CNN often misusing the word literally, and from the rooftop saying, you know, they're literally murderers, they're literally this, there's literally that, there's literally feces all over the floor, and so forth. You know, sometimes there was some of that, but the emphasis was the stories they were telling were usually exaggerated, actually more figurative than literal in lots of places.
But, of course, wasn't there sort of a breakdown of the police there? A lot of the police just took off and went AOL?
Yeah, police took off and were seen later on in, you know, cruising down Houston and Baton Rouge and other cities. They left their responsibilities. Some of them actually started committing crimes. I mean, this was an opportunity for them to steal, in some cases stealing cars, in other cases lifting merchandise.
And
at the same time, there were some very honest policemen. There were folks who, even when there was a breakdown at the top, you know, there were individual policemen who went and did their duty and saved lives. So, again, you see a mixture. You see character coming out in crises, for good or for ill.
You sure do. Well, we'll be back in just a moment. Our guest is Marvin Olasky, and we're talking about his book, The Politics of Disaster. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest, Marvin Olasky. And, of course, we're talking about really what happened. And we've never really got the full story of everything that happened there. We still have implanted in our minds so much of what we've read in the newspapers and we saw on television that just wasn't true. And yet there certainly was a tremendous effort on the part of private business, And such of our church groups, various church groups were there, trying to help. And as soon as, of course, they were able to get around FEMA and actually and the other bureaucratic organizations, they were actually able then to do tremendous help and to help the people. Would you like to talk a little bit about some of the church groups, who they were and what they did?
Sure. For the most part, these were evangelical church groups, although you had, you know, some representation from just about every religion. I mean, there were Jewish groups that were involved. There were a couple of Muslim groups from Houston. But primarily, if you look at number one, the major national groups that were involved, Southern Baptist Convention, Salvation Army, these are evangelical groups and people who came and took all this time out of their regular lives because they believe that this is something they should do because God wants them to do it. You know, they really believed in being good Samaritans. And you know, if you look at the parable of the Good Samaritan, it's not just someone who sends some money. The Good Samaritan actually spends a lot of time. He goes and binds up the wounds of the guy who's been hurt badly in a drive-by appropriation of his funds. He goes and helps him. He puts him on his own donkey. He takes him to an inn, spends time with there, leaves money to make sure the bills are paid for, and says he's going to come back and check. So, you know, this is a donation of time, and it's pretty easy in some ways. I mean, it's good to make a contribution of money in a situation like this, but it's much harder to really contribute time, and it was primarily the evangelicals who did that. There's actually been some research that goes beyond Hurricane Katrina. It goes beyond other situations that, for the most part, religious conservatives, in terms of the donations of time and the donations of money, are actually more compassionate. And again, the word compassion means suffering with. It's personal involvement. It's not just sending a check or paying taxes. It's personal involvement. And the religious conservatives tend to be the most. The secular conservatives actually tend to be the least. According to this research, it's religious conservatives who give the most of their time and their money. And then there are religious liberals who do that. Secular liberals, secular conservatives, that's basically the order. And you saw that in Katrina. And you saw, interestingly enough, that this made an impact on people. I was reading one article from The Guardian, which is a British leftist newspaper. There was an atheist who was writing, and he's saying, you know, he's watching what's happening here after Katrina. And these evangelicals are coming and sacrificially giving of their time, their lives. And he's saying, basically, you know, there's something that propels them that are doing that, and I wish I had that. You saw these reactions from other people. For a couple of weeks, even the ACLU was quiet about all these terrible abuses that were going on, where there were people who were bringing food and water, and then those people, astoundingly enough, cruelly enough, were actually praying for the people. I mean, this is abysmal. But the ACLU was quiet for a couple of weeks because all these groups were coming and making such a difference. FEMA often was nowhere to be found. You listen to the mayors of some of these other cities in New Orleans and southern Mississippi. It was the church groups that showed up, and the government people were AWOL.
Hold up. We'll be back in just a moment with Marvin Alasky. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Marvin was simply talking about the help that the evangelical Christians had given. Yes, there were some Jewish groups there, there were some Muslim groups, and there were some other groups, but it was primarily the evangelical Christian charities that were there and giving of their time and effort, and really how impressive it was, even on some atheists who were there, as they saw the dedication of these people to helping other human beings, coming certainly without compensation because they felt it was something they should do. What part did the Red Cross play? Did they do a pretty good job?
Well, there are mixed reports on that. There were a lot of people, especially in some of the smaller communities around New Orleans and then in the Mississippi coast. A lot of these people had been Red Cross volunteers in past years, and they were so disgusted by the Red Sox, by the Red Cross absence in those situations that they said, "I'm never going to volunteer again. I'm never going to give any money again." That was bad. At the same time, the Red Cross worked very closely with the Southern Baptist Convention, to be able to provide some food and shelter to people who had left New Orleans and were in the areas some 20 or 30 miles away. So those reports are much better. The Red Cross was officially charged with helping people to find shelter for the weeks or in some cases months after Katrina. And a lot of the experience of people was that the Red Cross was bureaucratic. They were very disappointed in their procedures. So overall, the Red Cross does not, and again, it's a mixed picture. There were a lot of good Red Cross volunteers who, again, were very sacrificial in their own lives, but the overall report is not very good, and with all the money the Red Cross got more than any other group, they apparently did less than a lot of other groups.
How about the Salvation Army?
Salvation Army reports were enthusiastic, I mean, from everything I saw. I mean, they were there. They were passing out millions of dinners and sandwiches and so forth. I mean, they were providing shelter. They had a lot of volunteers coming forward, but they also have very experienced teams of folks who head to the disaster areas, and they've had experience. They had experience in Florida hurricanes. They've had experience in earthquakes. So they apparently know what to do, and they're very competent. But at the same time, they don't seem to have the same paperocracy that the government groups do.
So they came
off pretty well.
And really, the thing that I got reading the book was this paperocracy you refer to. FEMA or the government agencies, they've got to have their paperwork. If you don't have the paperwork done, you can't go in. You got to fill out a 65-page questionnaire before you can go and volunteer your time as a medical personnel, physician, nurse, technician to help. I mean, what madness is that?
Well, and it goes broader than disasters. It's good that a number of states have passed Good Samaritan laws now, which are particularly helpful to doctors and other medical personnel, you know, protecting them against really, really silly litigation when they actually volunteer to help someone. So that's important. But, you know, I've talked with lots of physicians all over the country, and they would like to do a lot more in helping the poor in setting up and serving in clinics where poor people can get good medical attention. But they have to pay so much these days in terms of liability because of, all sorts of possible lawsuits that it really hinders them in that. So we have to find a way to let people who want to be good Samaritans do so without running the risk of losing everything they have through rather frivolous lawsuits.
And then, of course, what about the military when they finally came in? And what about the various branches of the military, the National Guard, the military, and I don't know if you got at all into the mercenary groups that were there, but what was the National Guard? Did they do a pretty good job?
They generally did a good job, but it was slower than it should have been because there was a battle going on between the state and federal officials as to who would have authority over the National Guard, and then there were all these reports of New Orleans having become a military zone with the well-armed gangs of snipers and so forth. So it was slower than it should have been, but once they got rolling, they did a very good job. I mean, some of them came in very early, particularly from the Coast Guard, with boats and helicopters and so forth. But some of the regular military forces came in later than it should have been, but once they got there, I mean, they were very efficient in what they did. And, you know, they've done this sort of thing internationally. In Pakistan particularly, military people were very effective when they had a big earthquake there, bringing in food and supplies and tents and so forth. And that served a very good humanitarian purpose, but it's also aided our foreign policy because before the earthquake, there were surveys showing that most Pakistanis were very hostile to the U.S. After the earthquake, they saw what Americans did and what a difference they made in saving lives. And those public opinion polls, the reputation of Americans shot up, and suddenly you found most people very favorably disposed towards the United States.
Hold on. We'll be back in just a moment with Marvin Malasky talking about the politics of disaster. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Marvin Lasky. We're talking about the politics of disaster. We're talking about what really happened to Katrina. And really, of course, one thing you learn is that most people are good people. most people really want to help. And there were so many examples of heroism and really, of course, generosity on the part of many of the people who were involved. And then, of course, you had the FEMA. Now, did FEMA eventually sort of fade out of the way once things got underway? In other words, did they back off and figure out how they were going to spend a lot of money to try to make themselves look better? I mean, what they did in the way of dishing out money and credit cards, and it was almost like they had no concern at all about who was going to be paying for all the money they were giving away.
Yeah, they were getting such a bad press, and deservedly so. In the first week or two, that they suddenly decided, hey, we're going to be the good guys here. We're just going to pass out the money. And, yeah, there have been at least what's been reported already, a couple of billion dollars of fraud. That's what's been found out. There's probably a lot more there, too. But on the other hand, if they suddenly started to crack down, they would immediately be accused of cruelty, heartlessness, and so forth. So either way, they do it. They tend to get a bad reputation. That's the problem of a big bureaucracy. They really have a hard time. They really have a hard time getting help to the people who really need help and figuring out a way to keep out the crooks.
Now, I was just reading the other day the paper about all the mobile homes that they actually bought to put the people into. I mean, tens of thousands of mobile homes, 200, I don't know, a quarter of $1 billion or something ridiculous. I mean, they're spending hundreds of, tens of thousands of dollars every month just for fields to put all these mobile homes in that they bought. Somebody must have made an awful lot of money off of that.
Yeah, I think so. And then a lot of these mobile homes are sitting and rusting and... at the same time, there are a lot of people in New Orleans who need good housing, but there's really just, these big fields of government mobile homes, and there are a lot of companies that would like to be able to provide housing for their employees, but, again, because of the regulation that the government is not allowed just to say to hand over these mobile homes to these companies that would actually put them to use.
And so, as you read, of course, all the inefficiency, and here are the people, I mean, investing literally billions of dollars in things that don't help at all, and people who really do need help, unable to get it. And, of course, you're always filling out forms and more forms and more forms. And of course, Mr. Olasky talks about the paperocracy, which is really the burden of government. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment, and, of course, we'll... be joining the rest of our network right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening, Marvin Olasky, his book, The Politics of Disaster. And at this time, I'd like to ask if you have a website, if you'd like to tell people how they can get your book.
Well, they can get the book through bookstores. It should be all over the place. They can go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com or one of those places. So it should be readily available. And then if people want to learn about World Magazine, which is one of the most read national news magazines in the country, and it comes from a biblical perspective, they can go to www.worldmag, W-O-R-L-D-M-A-G, worldmag.com. Or they could call 800-951-NEWS. 800-951-NEWS. Because in the world, again, we do a lot of reporting about this. We did a lot of reporting right after Katrina, week after week, and following up. And, we have a reporter back writing about it now for the anniversary.
All right, fine. Well, then, we've talked about the effectiveness of the military, the effectiveness. But what about the business? You mentioned the part that business played in coming to the rescue of the people there. And, of course, ordinarily we think of business as totally intent upon making money. But there were some corporations that really acted responsibly without any hope of compensation. They just wanted to help. Would you like to talk about that?
Well, people who came out of this very well were the leaders of Walmart and FedEx and Home Depot because, number one, their planning was a lot better than the government's planning. I mean, they knew this was coming. They pre-positioned material so that it would be there, and they often made bottled water and other stuff available to people, and then they came and sold at a steady price generator so people would get power again. So they were actually the heroes also in many communities.
In fact, I can remember one story where Walmart was trying to come in with food and water, and then the Pima wouldn't let them in for some reason or other.
Yeah, it's strange when people basically have to fight their own government in order to help other people. But that's one of the weird things we saw.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if you'd like to ask Mr. Alasky any questions, he certainly has studied this. He has the information. And, of course, can put to rest many of the stories that we heard at that time, totally exaggerated and reflecting what I really think is irresponsible reporting on the part of the mass media. Would you agree?
I'd agree with that. The local newspaper, the New Orleans Times-Picayune, did a good job and managed to get out news to a lot of people. But the for the most part, the national cable networks and the national broadcasters, they were just piling rumor upon rumor and exaggeration upon exaggeration.
Well, now, what can we learn from this, and what about for future emergencies? Because, you know, we live, I believe, in very uncertain times. I believe we are going to see other natural catastrophes, either man-made or perhaps acts of God. What can we learn from this about how things should be handled, and what part should FEMA be playing?
Well, I think the federal government and other parts of government have a basic role in trying to promote the general welfare. I mean, this is what the federal government is supposed to do, according to the preamble of the Constitution, to provide for the common defense, to promote the general welfare. And there's a real distinction between providing and promoting. You can promote the general welfare by maintaining or regaining law and order to make sure that in fact there aren't riots and gangs and shooting going on and so forth. That's one thing that can happen right away. And if the government had gone in quickly and done that would have been very helpful in putting aside some of these rumors right from the start. You can also keep the roads clear. I mean, this is something that you should really be working on. If you do those things well, you're doing a lot. And then you let other groups come in. You really foster the work of church groups and civic groups and all kinds of religious organizations that want to come in and provide help, businesses and so forth. There's no reason why FEMA, at its best, should have to duplicate what Walmart and FedEx and Home Depot do. They don't have to set up their own stores and reserves of material when these groups know how to do it, and they do it very well. You know, these groups are going to have to get some compensation for everything that they give away, but you're still going to be saving money than having the federal government set up a dual system, act parallel to private enterprise, and doing it much less efficiently. So, you know, these are some of the lessons to really emphasize the work of volunteers, honor those volunteers. I think that, for example, if a person gives a room in his home to a person needing refuge, then that person should be able to take a tax deduction for it. I mean, that's a real cost to the person. And in the same way you can take a tax deduction for making a contribution in dollars, you should also be able to have a tax deduction or a tax credit for making a contribution of a room in your home, which is actually a much more intensive time of help. So I could go through a list of things to do, but basically I think you have government working on infrastructure, law and order, roads and so forth, and then you really emphasize the work that a whole variety of private and civic and religious groups and individuals can do to help those in need.
Well, you know, of course, first of all, you had 80% of the population that got out of New Orleans before the hurricane hit and the levees gave way. And then, of course, I'm sure the same was true along the Mississippi coast. I'm sure a lot of those people moved inland before the full ferocity of the storm hit. But then you've got simply hundreds of thousands of people, you know, in the motels and the hotels. And eventually, where are they all going to go? There are not that many hotels and motels there. What did actually happen?
Well, a lot of people, I think, thought they could ride it out if they went to a strong building. Mayor Nagin basically hid himself for a couple of days on the 27th floor of the Hyatt. Instead of going down and actually helping in that situation, he apparently panicked. So you had a lot of that going on. But at the same time, I mean, one of the things, and this is for listeners anywhere, lots of problems can develop again, as you said, whether from natural disasters or man-made disasters from terrorism, I mean, all of us should have in our homes, say, a week supply of food and water, just in case. It's not, you don't have to have a year supply, you don't have to head to the hills, but, you know, enough to keep you going if things are really disrupted for a week or two. Anyone could do that. And yet you saw there were some people in New Orleans who ended up in the Superdome or the Convention Center, not because they were flooded out, because they had no food in their homes. If they had just had those precautions, they could have saved themselves a lot of misery.
Okay, and I really think that certainly a lot of these people, you know, certainly at least I know they had friends, that they could stay with friends. And a lot of people take in people that they didn't know, just give them a place to stay.
Yeah, there was a lot of that, you know, this is a heartening story. I mean, and in some cases it turned out badly. I mean, you can hear from people who took in people they didn't know, and those folks ended up trashing their homes. But in most cases it ended up very well. The people who needed shelter got shelter, and the people who could provide that, you know, had a good sense of doing what many of them felt God wanted them to do.
And I really think that really one of the messages of this story is that there are an awful lot of good people in America here, and we're still a great country and a tremendous camaraderie of strangers for other people in need. So I think it really, in that respect, it's a very, very warming story. What about the U.S. military when they got in, separated from the National Guard? What were they doing?
Well, for the most part, what they were called upon to do, they did very well. As I was mentioning, it took longer than it should have because of, again, bureaucratic stuff and because of all the rumors floating around. But, you know, the military is very important, especially internationally, when it comes to helping people in disaster and having a humanitarian function and also making friends for America. It's very important when it comes to fighting terrorism. I mean, both internationally, you know, we could very readily. I mean, we've just been hearing about plots in London and so forth. We could very readily have another terrorist attack on our country, and the military is very important in responding to that. So there are a lot of things that could happen, and I think one of the lessons of Katrina is, and as well as lessons of terrorism, is you know, don't think we're immune. It can happen to us, even if you're not living in a bowl in New Orleans. It can happen to you in different ways, and so be prepared.
And, Chris, you, in your book, you talk about so many of the major disasters of earthquakes or of volcanic eruptions or other things that have happened, you know, with phenomenal loss of life in the past. And one of the points you make in the opening chapters of your book is that usually people don't believe it can happen. I mean, even, you know, when the volcano is beginning to erupt, it's just up the hill from where you are, most people aren't going to evacuate until the lava is running down the hillside or the ash has simply decimated the community. It seems that people are the same today as they've always been. They believe it can't happen to me.
Right. Yeah, again, in the book, I just go through both world history and American history and show all the times that people erroneously thought they were safe and found out sometimes much too late. So, you know, this, and I think this is heightened now because we don't have to war, along with natural disasters, I mean, there's also this concern about terrorists. So, and that's one of the, you know, I'm doing some writing here on natural disasters, and then I've also, I also had some fun actually writing my first novel, basically the war on terror. There are Americans who go to Turkey, and there they are kidnapped by Hezbollah, Turkish Hezbollah. So, you know, I've been looking into that and developing an action novel based on that. So here are two concerns. We don't have to go through life dreading and fearing and things like that. We just have to be prepared and recognize that we need to take precautions and we need to be willing to fight back.
And the thing is, don't go to Turkey right now.
No, don't go to Turkey right now because there's a lot of anti-American sentiment that's growing there. I spent a lot of time in Turkey 2 summers ago, and that's what led into the writing of this novel. And for the most part, Western Turkey tended to be very supportive, but you go into Eastern Turkey near Syria and Iraq and so forth, and a lot of hostility towards Americans there.
All right, well, let's go to Jack, who's calling from Michigan. Incidentally, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Jack, do you have a question for our guest?
Actually, two. First, I heard a a lady from Louisiana State Government call a talk show describing the fact that FEMA or some other U.S. agency required they request federal assistance under some insurrection process. And then the second question is it true that the Bush administration diverted funds out of the fortification upgrading of the dikes or the levees that could have prevented all that flooding?
All right, fine. Those two legitimate questions. Jack's point is that the people were required to fill out the forms exactly properly and under certain old restrictions or certain piece of legislation that dealt with insurrection. Have you heard anything of that sort, or does that sound pretty far out?
I didn't hear the question at all.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, Jack was just calling. He's calling from Michigan. He said that he'd heard somebody from a talk show saying that the people were requested, when they were requesting federal aid, to request it on some sort of an insurrection state statute. They had to use the proper statute to request the aid from the federal government.
Well, I suspect what he's referring to is if you're going to have the U.S. military involved in law enforcement in local cities, you have to go through a lot of hoops to do that, and that's designed to, you know, keep the military from engaging in a coup at some point. But as far as the other types of activities, that I don't think was the case.
And the other question was, is there any truth to the fact that the reason that this happened, the levees gave way, was because the Bush administration had actually funneled the money to other activities rather than into levee repair?
No, that's not accurate. There was money appropriated, and the money wasn't used. So if the money that had been appropriated had been used properly, as far as I've seen looking at all the data, there wouldn't have been the breaches of the levees and so forth. They would have been strong enough to hold.
In other words, the money was there, but they were spending on all sorts of things, on casinos and parking for casinos. And anyway, thanks so much for calling, Jack. And let's go to Jeffrey, who's calling from, of all places, Louisiana. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi. Of course, I'm calling from New Orleans, where there's still huge amounts of damage that have not been fixed. We reached a plateau in terms of development post-Katrina. And the real point I want to make to your author is that a lot of what he's saying is correct. I lived through Katrina. I was one of the ones who got out before the storm hit. So I witnessed everything that happened from Thibodaux, Louisiana, where I stayed with my brother. My question to him is this. Have you heard of any eyewitness reports, as I have, that some of those canal levees, not the river levee, but the canal levees, were blown up? And also, have you heard of any information concerning the fact that the federal government is now putting in such requirements, that is, that houses must be raised 3 feet above the ground to such an extent that many parishes, that our counties in Louisiana, are balking about this? And I can tell you this, Jefferson Parish did not accept those requirements.
All right, well, let's take one question at a time.
Right.
Marvin, Jeffrey's calling and saying that there were a lot of rumors about those levees, or at least some of them actually, being exploded or being demolished by explosives. Have you heard anything about that? Is there any truth to it, to your knowledge?
Well, I've heard that at one particular point there was someone saying that, but I've seen no evidence for that at all.
All right, fine. The second thing is that apparently there are some requirements from the federal government for aid and rebuilding, that they're going to have to raise a lot of these homes up about 3 feet or so to try to get them to a higher level so they won't flood so easily. And there's a lot of resistance from many of the parishes there towards this requirement of having to, I suppose they're going to have to bring in a lot of additional fill before they rebuild the houses. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, and that's one of the stipulations that a lot of people in New Orleans want to have, and then some are very much opposed to it. See, the question is, there is a national flood insurance program which is available to people, but the question is, do you want to make that insurance available if people are building homes again, in this bowl that are going to readily be flooded. I mean, what's the point of doing that? If in fact you're just making yourself a sucker for the next hurricane that comes along. You know, a lot of people have moved out of New Orleans. A lot of them won't come back, but the ones that do, you're just sitting ducks for the next storm unless you do something to raise the houses a little bit.
And Jeffrey, don't you think it would be logical to build up the land so they wouldn't be susceptible to flooding?
You are running into a clash between that and the Federal Historic Districts and the Vieux-Carré Commission. Well, we're going to have to come back. I'm going to have to come back because you got a break.
All right, Fano, you just hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we have Jeffrey calling from Louisiana, pointing out that there are some people that object to actually raising of the level at which they're going to be rebuilding the houses. Marvin, certainly can the people rebuild there if they want to, but it's just that they won't get any federal funds. Is that what it's about?
Well, there's a lot of going back and forth that's around. I mean, that's one of the issues and a central one, as far as I understand. But there's a lot more going on. There have been, at this point, probably half a dozen different planning groups that have been brought in by different factions within New Orleans. They're all arguing about it. As far as I see, Mayor Nagin is not providing much leadership right now, and the whole thing is up for grabs.
I mean, I've heard in certain areas, and you, perhaps both of you would comment on this, certain areas, specifically the areas where the blacks live, where they're discouraging rebuilding. They would like to actually put casinos in there. Is there any truth to that?
I wouldn't be surprised if there are some people who want to do that. This is the big debate that's going on in New Orleans right now. From what I've Again, I'm not a New Orleans resident, and it'd be interesting to hear from people who are right there. But Fortune magazine this week, which I have no connection with, but they had an article just going on a long article. Excuse me, my voice is starting to run out now after an hour. But a long article on the back and forth that's going on politically. It just seems like a huge political battle that's going on.
Well,
I'd be surprised if there's some people who would just want to put casinos in there and drive other people out.
Jeffrey, what are your thoughts?
All right, let me give you some information on this. There's a major clash between these federal regulations and the Historic District Landmark Commission and Vieux-Carré Commission. The French Quarter buildings could not be raised because they were built in the 18th and 19th centuries, and if you tried to raise them, you'd have to tear down the French Quarter and then rebuild it all over again. Furthermore, the problem of raising the homes 3 to 4 feet, in some cases, the property holders are in areas that are very low, much lower than the land near the river. And the problem there is that you have Agenda 21, and you know what sustainable development is with their desire for green spaces, etc. On the other hand, we also know that that there are a lot of property holders who cannot afford to raise those homes 3 feet above the ground, and some of them may not come back because of the excessive requirements for zoning.
Hey, we're out of time, Jeffrey, but thank you so very much. And I sympathize with the people who are there, and I think when you get into the zoning requirements and all of these things, it's going to be a real can of worms. Maybe you can call us some other evening and we can talk about it.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. And Marvin Alasky of World Magazine, thank you so very much for being with us for an hour.
Great. I appreciate your question.
Good night. God bless you.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Marvin Alasky. I think fascinating book, fascinating read. Well, this is the time when we have to remind all of our listeners of Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and you can subscribe to our newsletter. You can join the Radio Liberty family, or if you'd like a free copy of the newsletter, we'd be glad to send it to you. And certainly I suggest the May newsletter specifically, because I think it gives you an excellent overview of the problem of immigration and of course, who is really behind this and is encouraging the illegal immigrant movement and what their true agenda is. So if you'd like to get a free copy of my newsletter, 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, we hope that many of you, if you've not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, will want to get copies, either the book or the DVD or the video. If you want to understand what is really going on in the Middle East and where we're headed, you want to get the video, Iraq, the Untold Story, and there's a syllabus that goes with that. You want to get the syllabus, too, because it has all the documentation. It's really not simply about Iraq. It's about all the wars of the last century, every one of them contrived, fought for a specific purpose, and that is to bring us into a one-world government. There were to be three great world wars, and the third great world war is approaching, and, of course, my fear that the coming conflict, whether it will be Israel, probably Israel with Syria, and perhaps either Israel or the United States with Iran, and, of course, that will be sort of the introduction to inflaming the entire Islamic world against America, and bringing about a class of civilizations that will end with the destruction of either Islam, as we know it, or Christian civilization, and out of the chaos will come a demand for a one-world government and a new world religion. And there is a drive for a new world religion. There is a drive, an intent to change the world by people who have a different worldview because they worship a different God. And to understand what that's about, you really need to get the videos we offer. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The secret mysteries of America's beginnings. And, of course, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, the new DVD we have put out by Pastor Joe Schimmel. And it is about the movies you watch. And you probably have seen these movies, or many of them as I have, but you didn't understand the message because you didn't understand the goal and objective of the scriptwriters, who wrote the scripts, and, of course, what their purpose was. And I believe the Da Vinci Khan by Joe Schimmel is it's almost 3 hours in length, and it is one of the most gripping DVDs you will ever see. If you're interested in what's happening financially, you'll certainly want to get our talk on the financial tsunami, and I can tell you we finally got the DVD is in on that. If you've been waiting patiently, well, we do have them, and we'll have more. We'll have them on a regular basis now. You need to get the DVD and the syllabus to understand that we're in real trouble financially as a nation, and the stock market is being manipulated, as are the price of so many of the commodities. Because, of course, they want to create a perception in the minds of the people that everything's all right, but it's not all right. And America's in real trouble financially because our leaders are being totally irresponsible and accumulating a massive debt that can never be repaid, and the only way to correct it is going to be to collapse the economy and then start all over again. And with that, of course, will come the destruction of these savings and wealth of most of the people in America, but not all. There's a small group who are going to survive. They're the people who are planning all of this. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. That is, again, that's the financial tsunami. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America and for revival and for our leaders and ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, this evening we have with us Christy Diamond, who's, and we're going to be talking with Christy about her videos that she's put out. And good evening, Christy. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Dr. Stan?
I'm doing fine. I understand you've got a new video out.
Yes, I have one that is based on the February 2004 Institute of Medicine hearing on the danger of mercury in vaccines and the connection between that and autism and neurological disease.
Now, my understanding is that there's a great deal of testimony there that as to how dangerous the mercury in the vaccines was. And then, of course, the Institute of Medicine came up and said, there's no danger, and we don't want any more investigation, you know, we shouldn't waste any more trouble. This is definitely decided there's no danger. Is that what really happened?
No, that's not what happened.
What happened?
A majority of the scientists came, and they were visibly upset. Some of them were, like, with tears in their eyes, weak-kneed at the podium, and said there is a problem. And there were four individuals who were clearly had conflicts of interest who said they fell short of saying that there wasn't a connection. But they said they couldn't find one. It's sort of these weasel words, you know. I can't find it, you know, we can't find it because they manipulated the numbers in their studies. And so then they wait 2 months and they do an incredible marketing blitz. I mean, it had to be at least $1 million worth of marketing. It got on broadcast news and said, oh, everything is okay. Everything's okay now because we've had all of these testimonies and there isn't any connection between your child's autism, neurological disease, and the thimerosal, which is mercury, in vaccines. And that is not what happened. I mean, I would say I went to a different meeting than they did. And in fact, I have spoken to a few of the scientists, and three of them in particular had seen a memo from the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, that directed the Institute of Medicine to find no link between autism and mercury.
But why would the Institute of Medicine violate scientific precedents, endanger the lives of our children, and come up with a report that was blatantly fraudulent?
Why would they do that? I, you know, it's beyond my capacity of morality to even, I don't know why they would do it, except for one thing is quite clear. They know about it, and they're not doing anything about it, so now I have to think it's intentional.
And, of course, what they're doing is doing incredible damage to the minds, the brains of our children.
They absolutely are. And, you know, interestingly enough, this particular toxin, you know, mercury is the big star, it tends to affect a genetic pool, and that pool also tends to be the most intelligent of the population.
So basically what they're doing is destroying the intelligence of a whole generation of children.
That's right.
And even if they don't get autism, it will have other impact on them.
There are many other impacts. I mean, almost every neurological disease, you know, obsessive compulsive, ADD, Alzheimer's disease, Lou Gehrig's disease, you could go on and on. And they're starting to make connections between that and diabetes, obesity, cancer, brain tumors, all kinds of things.
You're speaking now specifically of mercury intoxication.
That's right, because it interacts with other other toxins as well.
All right, you hang on there. We're going to be back in just a moment with Christy Diamond, who's actually attended the meeting, and, well, we're going to let her tell you a little bit more about what was said. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Christy Diamond, and one of our friends had brought me a flyer that's being passed out at schools, and it was talking about vaccines and the importance of I think it was the flu vaccine they were trying to give the children, And it said, we want you to know that there is no relationship between vaccines and the thimerosal and autism or any other disease. And if you doubt that, why, you should read the Institute of Medicine report from 2004. And if you doubt that, why, you just ask your doctor, and he'll tell you. Well, of course, where is the doctor going to get his information? He's going to get it from the CDC. That is intentionally allowing the poisoning of our children and the destruction of their intelligence and this incredible epidemic of autism we have. Well, Christy, do you have this all on videotape?
Yeah, what we did is we have 9 hours of videotape. So what we did is we broke down each presenter into an abstract. And then that abstract covering the person's any conflict of interest that they have, what they covered, the studies that they presented, and what their conclusions were. And so each person has between a 4 to 8 minute presentation on our DVD. So you can really watch the merit of what they presented for every single person. We included everybody. We didn't leave anybody out. So you can have a completely objective view of what was really presented at that day.
And, of course, then the Institute of Medicine, which is supposed to be above politics and is supposed to be dedicated to politics, fraudulently manipulated the information and came up with a conclusion saying not only that there was no problem, but we should not try to visit this again or not try to investigate it further. Would that be a fair statement?
That would be a very fair statement. They're not succeeding in getting people not to visit it, however, because there are so many people who are touched by this. We've got one of the scientists has, through the help of some of U.S. members of Congress, gotten into the vaccine safety data link, and they have pulled out data and compared it to not only autism, but now they're comparing it to diabetes and obesity and, you know, other kinds of diseases that one wouldn't have thought would be related, but when you put it across it, it's looking like it's an exact straight line.
Is this Dr. Mark Geyer, or is that somebody
else? That's right, Dr. Mark Geyer.
All right, fine. Well, you hang on here with us. We'll be back in just a moment with Christy Thiemann, and this is really one of the most incredible stories you've ever heard. Could this really go on in America? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Christy Thiemann, and she has one video, which we do carry now. It's called Without Smoking Gun. That is available in DVD, isn't it?
It's Mercury is Slow Death.
Mercury is Slow Death, okay.
Yeah, and it has the famous smoking tooth in it, where we have mercury vaporizing off a 50-year-old extracted tooth that has an amalgam filling in it. And that one, I think, really did some damage to their representations that mercury is inert in amalgam fillings and doesn't cause any damage.
Now, did you show that at the hearings at all? Or?
That was shown in a PowerPoint presentation, interestingly enough, by Dr. Boyd Haley, and he showed our video, and it's fairly dramatic. And anybody can reproduce it, except that it's kind of dangerous to be around mercury. But basically, if you have a shortwave ultraviolet light and a phosphorescent screen behind it, you can see the shadow of the vaporization coming up. And in ours, with the low copper amalgams, it looks kind of like smoke coming off of a lit cigarette, just sort of wasting. The high copper amalgams come off kind of like erupting volcano. We didn't have one of those at the time, but we'd like to reproduce that one. There's a TV station, I believe, in Minneapolis that did it.
All right, fine. Of course, Dr. Boyd Haley was professor of chemistry at the University of Kentucky, as I remember. And he's done a lot of work on the relationship between Alzheimer's disease and mercury and mercury amalgams. And certainly I'm looking forward to hearing his testimony. He's certainly a very, very courageous individual who's been trying to get people to understand that the frightening increase in Alzheimer's disease is at least in part is directly related to the mercury amalgams, which so many people have in their mouth, which is toxic to the brain and produces exactly the sort of changes we find. The big problem is that, I mean, mercury will destroy cells. It'll destroy brain cells. You put a little bit of this mercury into a petri dish with the cells, and they just die. You've seen those pictures, haven't you, Christy?
Oh, yes. The University of Calgary produced those, and they've been replayed in Congress at least 8 times that I'm aware of. In fact, our documentary, Mercury, a Slow Death, is having a repeat performance right now at the U.S. House of Congress because they have a second bill, a second stab at getting a bill to ban mercury in amalgam fillings right now.
Well, I know that certainly some of the states have not mercury fillings, but they're getting the mercury out of the certainly out of the vaccines. At least a couple of the states, although I know that they got the legislation through in Illinois. It was passed by both both houses of the legislature, and then the public health authorities simply refused to go ahead and carry out the requirements of the legislation.
Yeah, that's I've heard that. Now up here in Washington State, they passed that bill too, and you know we can thank largely an effort by many, many, many people who have gone to their legislators and told them about this problem, and they got some of them to listen, and then they actually have sponsored scientists like Mark Dyer and to come in and do a presentation so they actually understand the science behind this. And actually they came, the Dyers came to Washington and we passed it here in our state unanimously through the House and the Senate.
Now that was, of course, to take the mercury out of the vaccine?
That's right. And it, it's one little step where, you know, it's for children, I believe it's children under 3 and pregnant women who are not allowed to have any vaccines with thimerosal in them.
Now that's really wonderful because actually, of course, what has happened is the Academy of Obstetrics and Gynecology now is recommending that every pregnant woman get a vaccine shot, an influenza vaccine shot, during the first trimester of her pregnancy when it'll do the most damage to her unborn child. Which you have to say, why would you want to do something like that?
Isn't that the craziest thing you've ever heard?
Oh, I don't think it's crazy at all, Christy. I think it's directly diabolical. I think
they know exactly
what they're doing.
Absolutely.
And I think it's about time that, in fact, we have a great new a video. In fact, I'm going to send you a copy of it. Do you know Dr. David Ayoub? It may not.
Yes, I do.
He's back in Illinois, and Dr. Ayoub made the mistake of tuning into the wrong shortwave program, and he heard our talking about this sort of thing, and so he began studying this on his own, and he has done so much great research into the background of not only thimerosal and vaccines, but certainly this whole thing of the influenza vaccine with thimerosal in it for women in the first trimester of their pregnancy. I'll send you a copy of that. I think you'll find
it fascinating. Oh, I would love that.
And certainly I'm indebted to him. I've learned a lot, and he's done a lot of great research and gone far beyond myself or anybody else, I think, has looked into it. But let's get back to the Institute of Medicine.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things that happened there, they talked about mercury amalgam, and they also talked about thimerosal appearing in other medications and pharmaceuticals, and one of them is these things that these athletes are using to bodybuild, which would be pharmaceutically produced testosterone and human growth factor. And we found that there's a good chunk of thimerosal in there too, but it wasn't listed in the physician's desk reference. And upon calling the manufacturer, found out there were 17 micrograms in the testosterone.
Why would they put that into the mercury into the testosterone? I mean, what possible reason or rationale would there be for that?
Well, you know, the pharmaceutical companies claim they need it to sterilize,
But it doesn't work well. I mean, the scientific study shows it really doesn't really work.
Well, it does work. It kills things, including humans. But they go crazy beforehand or they convulse. These poor kids, they're emulating these ball players. And they inject themselves sometimes 200 times before they go to camp. And some of them go nuts. Some of them get suicidal. Some of them just convulse and die. And the coroners, they say, they look for drugs. They look for all the wrong things. They're not looking for what's there. And these kids are poster children for mercury poisoning.
And I had no idea that they were putting that in. And this is for injectable testosterone, then.
That's right.
And injectable growth hormone?
I don't know. The growth hormone, I know they did it a couple of years ago. I couldn't confirm that at this very moment, but the testosterone, yes.
And, of course, they're taking massive amounts of that.
Absolutely. And, they had these, it's interesting, it was the same committee, the Committee for Government Reform in the U.S. Congress that heard all the amalgam and the thimerosal vaccine issues. They also had a bunch of the ball players come in for hearings on that. Where, they were talking about, whether or not it should be legal and all this sort of stuff. And they were talking about it, and they had all these parents of kids who had emulated them. And they started talking about the symptoms, and I'm going, gee, this sounds awfully familiar. These symptoms are exactly the same as you would see in a child who becomes ADD and then autistic after they have had too many vaccines.
You mean these are the children who are injecting themselves with testosterone so that they can get big muscles, look like Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Exactly. Except that they're older now. The kids that get these vaccines that we're initially talking about are babies pretty much, up until like 5 years old. But now we're talking about a group of kids who have probably already been vaccinated with the whole, mandated vaccine program, and then they're in high school now, and they are injecting themselves with more of it.
So
we have kids come to school with guns. We have, kids get violent, and it's often males because there's a testosterone relationship with mercury. So
did some of the parents at the hearings talk about the change in their child's mental attitude?
Sure. Yeah, there was a lot of testimony towards that. But they, I was sitting and watched these hearings, and I said, do you guys realize this is the same problem?
Now, how did you find out that there was a thimerosal, for our listeners out there, that's got this mercury program. It's basically methylate. In fact, I can remember when I was an intern in medicine, why we used to paint all wounds with methylate. And then one day it sort of disappeared, and I didn't know why it disappeared. Well, it disappeared because it was so toxic. And it's so toxic, they've taken that, and you can't buy methylate anymore. It's too toxic to put on the skin, but it's perfectly all right to inject into our kids.
That's right.
And in fact, even to our unborn children by giving it to the mother, so it will actually, certainly localize in the brain of the developing child, which doesn't make sense unless perhaps there is another agenda. Now, how then did you find out that there was the thimerosal in the testosterone they were injecting?
Well, I couldn't take total credit for that. What happened was there are a whole group of people who are parents of autistic children. And they, like you and I, have gotten very suspicious about what's been going on. And they started to recognize the symptomology, and so they went to the PDR, the physician's desk reference, and looked up all the ingredients in the testosterone in the book. Well, it didn't list thimerosal, so one innovative parent called the manufacturer, and they said, We put it in there. It's just a sterilization thing so we don't have to put it in the PDR.
Well, of course, how can we tell them, if the government certainly knows exactly what's going on. They know the disastrous results of the mercury that they're giving our children, and they don't care. And although they've taken it out of the childhood vaccines that are given in the United States, they've left it in the childhood vaccines that are given to children throughout the rest of the world, and Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, who are great advocates of population control, are going to spend billions of dollars to give toxic doses of mercury to children in third world nations throughout the world. We'll be right back here with Christy, and we'll welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, Christy, what did you do once you'd actually found out about what these other parents do of autistic children? Did they, of course, try to draw the attention of this to people? Because I've never heard this before this evening.
I don't think it's really up on the radar yet, Dr. Stan. Honestly, it's one of those things where you start connecting the dots. Mark Geyer and I have discussed it at some length. We all have our hands full with just the vaccine issue. We would love for more people to understand what their kids may be doing to themselves, but
where are these kids getting the testosterone? You know, you're able to get this with a prescription. Do they have some other sources?
I don't know, actually. My understanding with the ball players is they get it illegally. So I'm not sure how the kids would get it. You know, these trainers managed to get it, and, they must have, their special athletes that they're training, and they get credit for all the good things that they do, and inject them full of these chemicals. Dr. Geyer was clued into it because in his life, he was on the board for the Olympics as a medical doctor. And so he got familiar with the kind of injections and so forth that these athletes were doing, because he would evaluate, like they did for the bike. What was his name, Floyd?
For Lance Armstrong?
No, the recent guy.
Oh, right, fine.
I think it's Floyd something.
Right.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm not
for Floyd, right.
I'm not a big sports person, but anyway, they're going to take his award away from him because they found a high amount of testosterone in his test. And they're claiming that it's synthetic testosterone.
I'm sure they can tell. They have some amazing ability to determine all these things.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. So he went from having a night out on the town and being very inebriated to, bringing in the first place after being behind 8 minutes. And, one has to wonder, these people are under such incredible pressure to perform that they're willing to jeopardize their very lives.
Amen to that. Well, of course, we just got a call in that Floyd Landis was the gentleman.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, Floyd Landis. So, okay, good. Thank you.
Oh, don't thank me. I didn't come up with that.
Thank them.
In fact, I think that was my wife that came up with that information. Anyway, our telephone number, well, we'll put that out as soon as we get back on there. Yes, Sydney, but, you would think he would have been smart enough to realize that he was going to get caught. But maybe if he'd been taking it before and he had too much mercury, he just wasn't thinking well. Because the effect of mercury, not only, of course, on diseases such as autism and Asperger's disease and ADD and ADHD, but, if you measure the IQ of our students when they graduate from high school today, it is much lower than the IQ of students throughout the rest of the world, and we've always attributed this to the poor education. But I'm coming to the conclusion that the reason our students test so poorly on standardized tests at the end of their high school time is also related to much of the poisoning, and I'm talking about fluoride, aspartame, and specifically the mercury that these children are getting, which has a profound effect on their brains, and who'd want to hurt the brains of a child? Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Christy Diamond, and we're talking really about the Institute of Medicine meeting that was held in 2004, where the members of the board for the Institute of Medicine frankly lied about the influence of this, and how many people actually testified saying how dangerous it was, and how many people testified on the other side, and did they have any solid evidence that there was no relationship between thimerosal and the autism and these other terrible diseases that are afflicting so many of our children?
Well, there were a number of questions there. I'll start out with there were 15 people, and that included a congressman, Dr. Weldon, and he was very angry at the podium and went on for some time about the irresponsible behavior that he was seeing. And there were 9 people who testified that mercury was dangerous in various ways and presented studies that they either had themselves or presented other people's studies. The other 6, of those 6, they all had conflicts of interest. By the way, the 9 had no conflicts of interest that we could determine. But the remaining 6 could find no causal connection, but they couldn't say that it didn't cause a problem either. 2 of them were very noncommittal. 4 of them were clearly, one of them was the director of the immunization program at the CDC. And interestingly, in the press packet, says I come as a press person, and they give you a press packet with everyone's bios and so forth in it. He left out his title in his resume. And I actually stumbled on it a couple months later when I was putting this documentary together. And I can't believe that someone would accidentally leave off his title at the CDC unless they just didn't want the press to know. And there were people, there were press people there, but this is such a complicated issue. If you're just dropping in and you don't know anything about the history, it's going to be very hard to understand what's happening in front of your very eyes.
All right, fine. So now, would some of these people actually, any of them, have direct ties to the manufacturers of the vaccine?
Well, I think they do. One of the really interesting ties that I found was the Harvard School of Public Health. It sounds very important, and it took me about 6 hours one day to find the financials for Harvard, and I found that school. And I found that they were funded through the National Institutes of Health, $350 million a year. And where does the National Institutes of Health get that kind of money? Because they're also people who are looking for grants and funding. They get it directly from the administration, from the Department of Human Health Services. And at that point, I had to sit down and take a deep breath.
Well, of course, in other words, it's being funded by the government. That it seems to have an agenda of promoting disease among our children. Now, what about the CDC? Doesn't it get some money from somehow from some of the drug companies or the vaccine manufacturers?
Well, you know, it's almost impossible to tell where the pharmaceutical companies end and the CDC starts. They have a revolving door of physicians and scientists who come back and forth. There is no clear line. There was an investigation that was done by some committee in the Senate about a year and a half ago, and they slapped their hand and they said, oh boy, I'm not going to do that anymore, but really nothing has changed. I mean, we've got a country, we are the only country in the world that has no cap on the profit that pharmaceutical companies can make. So what do? It's about money in that regard. They can come here and keep us all ill, tell us that they can't find a cure for our diseases or our conditions, and then give us a drug of some kind to make us better. But it doesn't cure anybody, and people become dependent on it, and of course it costs a lot of money.
Well, I think it's really a tragic situation when you have people in government who have another agenda, and I'm sure some of them, we know, for instance, in the National Institute of Health, that many of these people actually are getting money from the drug companies at the same time they're working for our government. And the excuse is, well, you're not going to be able to get good people unless you allow them to subsidize their government salary with grants from the various drug manufacturers and similar organizations. So we've got a real problem. And, of course, a lot of this gets back to the fact that we no longer have a society that believes in right and wrong and absolutes in God and God's punishment. I think we have a lot of common people, a lot of just down-to-earth people who really do believe in God. I think we've got a lot of people who educated in our universities, they destroyed their faith in God, and they've destroyed their faith in absolutes, and a lot of these people have morals that would make an alley cat blush. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment or two to wrap up the second last half of this program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Christy Diamond and Diamond. Is it Diamond or Diamond?
It's Diamond.
All right, fine. Christy Diamond, and we're talking about, of course, the Institute of Medicine meeting in 2004, where they came up with a totally fraudulent conclusion. Did anybody call them on it and ask them how they could possibly have done that? Has anybody talked to any of the members of that committee to find out how they could possibly come up with that conclusion based upon the testimony they heard?
Oh, many people have. In fact, when I call up, the minute they find out it's me, I get the iceberg treatment. They don't want to talk to people who talk the truth. They don't want to give you facts. They skirt the issues. You see it across the board in other issues that I've heard you discuss tonight. And, it's the same template. It's just it's cookie cutter, right? Right into that particular portion. And I would say that, you're talking about morality. I think that one of the symptoms of mercury in some people is it turns off their sense of ethics and morality. They become narcissistic and sociopathic and greedy. And that's how they operate. And so they're not, unhealthy people make unhealthy choices. They lose their spirituality in every way.
Well, I think it's really such a great, great, great tragedy of what's going on. Well, now, as far as the thimerosal, are they taking the thimerosal out of completely out of the vaccines, or are they leaving some of it in there? Do we have any idea?
Well, the latest information we've got from some of the scientists who have tested it is they are leaving a little bit in there. They say they have to. That would, for me, it's like, they will attack you for being anti-vaccine. I would say that I'm anti-fiction, be honest and truthful about what you're presenting. This herd immunity that they want to have us all to have because of the vaccine program and it's on a pedestal, it has no credibility anymore. They've lied to the American public, and it has no credibility whatsoever. Why would you want to inject yourself with something, like the flu vaccine, for example? They don't even know. They have to decide a year in advance what virus to choose for the flu, so they're guessing. I mean, this isn't educational intellectualism. They're guessing.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Christy Diamond. And before we go on, Christy, would you like to get your website out and how people can get in touch with you if they'd like to get information? We do carry your video, though. And give me that name one more time.
It's Mercury of Slow Death.
Mercury of Slow Death. But
Then what really happened at the IOM, that stands for Institute of Medicine.
And certainly I'd appreciate if you'd send me a copy of that. We'll probably carry that because I think it's so important that people actually see this hearing and then realize how the conclusion they came to, because it's quite obvious that somebody had actually given instructions they were not to find anything. Now, how did they actually see this directive? How did they intercept this directive that was sent to the Institute of Medicine?
Well, it's my understanding that some of the scientists who were involved in some of the autism litigation, they were able to view it. And I spoke to one scientist who actually resigned from the FDA because he felt that the warnings against mercury in fish and so forth for pregnant women were not strong enough. I actually sat next to him at dinner after this meeting, and he seemed to know that they were going to find no causal connection. And I said, how do you know this? And he wouldn't tell me. And it was almost a year and a half later, I was talking to, I actually did a video interview with Andrew Wakefield, and he said right on film that he saw it, that it was absolutely without a doubt clear that they had directed the Institute of Medicine to come with no causal connection. And he was horrified. It was actually a very moving moment. There were three of us in the room interviewing him at the time, and almost everybody, the crew, the camera crew, the interviewers, they just They were stunned.
Did he say this on film?
He did.
Do you actually have that film, or is that?
I do have it. I'm working it into a documentary we're doing on vaccines.
All right, fine. Well, I hope that you'll get that done, and we can get that on as well.
Absolutely.
But anyway, you do have the one on the Institute of Medicine already finished.
Yes, that one's done. That one's all ready to go, and I've got one on its way down to you already.
All right, we really appreciate it, and I'll get you back, Dr. Abes, because I think it's important. And anyway, we just want to get the information out. If you're out there in the listening audience and you're listening to Christy's story, give us I'd like to ask her a question. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Is it really possible that there are people in government that are knowingly and intentionally putting a mercury compound into vaccines, and not only into vaccines, but into a testosterone that will actually harm the minds of our children and harm the health of our children, and perhaps even bring about many of the other diseases that are plaguing them, like diabetes and obesity, and we're really going to have to talk to Dr. Geyer about that. But is it really possible that there'd be anybody that wicked and evil? Is there anybody that would actually set out to vaccinate children all throughout the world with childhood vaccines, knowing they contain toxic doses of mercury? And what would be the possible advantage to doing that? Why would you want to hurt children throughout the world? Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Christy, have you ever heard of any studies that have been done on animal studies on fertility and looking into the relationship between the mercury and fertility?
I don't know if I could quote one off the top of my head, but I know that I've read several, and we do know that mercury does cause reproductive dysfunction. It's one of the bigger symptomologies that we see in people. You see it especially in dental hygienists because they're mostly female population. What's really interesting, I wanted to let you know before I forget, is in mercury at slow death, we have a hearing that was a pro and anti amalgam filling group that was presented before the King County Board of Health. And two of the presenters for the pro amalgam fillings were co-authors on this Lisbon study that was done where they put amalgam fillings in these orphans without informed consent, and they were in the third or fourth year at the time, and they have just recently finished the second marketing blitz telling the American public that, oh, it's safe, we didn't find any kind of problem with these kids. But they don't even have their data analyzed yet, and they put this marketing blitz out.
I think it's rather frightening to see what's going on. And, Chris, a lot of these studies, they'll follow the kids for a couple of years, and then they say, see, there's no harm done, but it takes it sometimes before these symptoms of autism do begin to set in, or the mental deficiency, the other thing. They're intent upon convincing the American people that mercury fillings are perfectly safe.
Well, they don't want to find it. That's the problem, is they don't want to find it, so then they can market it. We're being marketed information that is just simply not only not true, but misleading, and there does seem to be an absolute purpose to it. And
all right, well,
I think we're in a lot of trouble here.
We really are. Well, I think, of course, if you destroy the minds of the people of a nation, you destroy the nation.
That's right.
We have Virginia calling from Michigan. Hi, Virginia. What part of Michigan are you calling from?
I am calling from Flint.
All right, good. Then you're listening on our station there. Well, what can we do for you this evening? Do you have a question or comment?
You have both. I just appreciate listening to you every night, and very informative.
It's getting pretty late back there in Michigan, though. It's after midnight, isn't it?
It's almost 1, I
all
believe.
Right. I appreciate you staying up.
Okay, I do it all the time. I've had 10 fillings. I got them back in the 80s, and over the years I've done research and found out that it causes all types of problems. And right now I've found a foundation that will help me to pay for it to get them out, but I have high blood pressure, and it just will not go down, even with medication. And I've learned that part of the amalgam that may be keeping it up. And I've had the Dempsey test, or whatever kind of test that is, that tests your urine, and it was off the board.
Now, this is for the mercury in the urine?
In the amalgam.
Right, okay.
Yes, in the urine, yes.
Have you been to a good doctor and he can't get your blood pressure down?
Well, no. Right now I'm trying to go natural health, but I understand I may have to stay on the pharmaceutical.
You may have to do that at least to get those mercury fillings out. And then, of course, you could hope it'll go down after that.
Okay.
All right. Virginia, keep us posted and tell us how you do after you get those fillings out. But
I will.
All right. But make sure you go to a dentist who knows how to do it, because a lot of dentists can take them out, but unless they have a dam in there, you need to go to the International Association of Oral and Medical Toxicology, IAOMT.org. That's IAO, International Association of Oral and Oral Medicine, IAOMT.org.
Okay.
And look and see if you private of a dentist in your area who's taken training on how to take those mercury fillings out. Okay?
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. God bless.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Okay, fine. All right, we have time for one or two more calls. Our telephone is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment for our guest this evening, Christy Diamond, and Christy's been on the front lines of this battle for some time. We carry her video, Mercury, a Slow Death. That's Mercury, a Slow Death. And believe me, it is. I mean, we've seen examples of mercury toxicity throughout the years. One of the most interesting things was something called Pink's disease that came from using a teething powder, a powder that had mercury in it. And it was used predominantly, as I remember, over in Australia. What's so interesting about that is that these children got mercury poisoning. They eventually outlawed the teething powder, and the acute disease slowed up. But those children today, many of them are infertile. In other words, 20 years down the line after mercury poisoning, permanent infertility. Have you heard that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. I've heard a lot about Pink's disease. It's one of those anomalies that goes along with all the case histories and stories that you hear about mercury. There are thousands and thousands of them. One of the main ingredients in spermatocidal fluid that kills sperm is mercury. It's like you cannot escape in any way. And now, in Washington State, for example, we have every waterway has exceeded the safe limits of mercury, yet you don't see it in the newspaper. And they say, well, you know, the fish have too much mercury in them. Well, where do you think the fish got the mercury? These dentists have been washing it down the drain, and it doesn't take any time at all. And they reconditioned their sludge, their bio-waste. Many utilities, bio-waste utilities, do this across the nation, and Seattle included. And they sell it or give it to farmers who are producing our food. And it takes, we did a little calculation how long it would take 3,000 dentists to pollute the state of Washington. And it takes 7 months and 10 days. And this has been going on for 20 years, so they've done it many times over.
And, of course, you're talking about the mercury waste from their offices.
Yeah, we're just talking about a calculation based on information we got from the Washington State Department of Ecology. And we knew how much mercury was being discharged into the sewer system. Now, this doesn't count the excrement that people leave, because they do slough off some of this stuff. And it doesn't count crematoriums who burn human bodies with amalgam fillings in them. And who knows if there's a pregnant woman or children who live within a mile of one of these places. And it turns out it's a significant amount, although the amount that goes in through dental amalgam discharge, that amount is almost equal to coal burning. It was just a staggering amount.
I think people have to understand that the amalgam filling is about 50% of that is mercury.
That's right.
And people have no idea. In fact, my understanding is that the dentists have one of the highest rates of suicide in the entire country as a profession. And, of course, mercury affects the mind. In fact, they used to use it for making hats. And, in fact, the people who made hats, felt hats, they would go mad. And that's where the expression came, mad as a hatter. And people are not being told that. And they're certainly not being told that that's what we're putting in the vaccines, that we're giving to your children. And that's what they're putting in the vaccines and the influenza vaccine. That's what we're giving to pregnant women and that we're giving to the elderly people. And if you take the influenza shot, three or four of them over a five-year period, 10 years down the line, your chance of getting Alzheimer's disease goes up 1,000%. That's the work of Dr. Pootberg. If you'd like to verify it, we'll be glad to, of course, send you the page from his website. And, you know, there's probably not one in 1,000 doctors who's ever heard of it. Again, of course, that's Dr. Pootberg's work on Alzheimer's disease. If you want to check it out, you go to his website, Pootberg, or give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. We'll, of course, get it for you. We've got Coy calling from Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Coy. How are you doing?
Just fine, Dr. Stan. I wanted to give you a heads up on something here. In 1998, when they first started spraying those chemtrails here, and they haven't stopped a day since, but in Kansas City area, that is, I got so that it was, whatever they were spraying was causing me so I couldn't breathe. I was having all kind of trouble. The only thing seemed to work was this here spray called Afrin. Now, they've got every store has got its own store brands. Well, it says don't use it for over 3 days or 12 days or something like that. But I used the darn stuff for 2 years, and I looked at the label, and I know a lot about chemistry, and I looked at everything was okay. One day I happened to look at the brochure in there, and at the very bottom, that thing is just loaded with mercury.
Now you quit taking it, Coy.
I did. That was you know, in 1998 on up, but that wasn't any measly 17 micrograms either. It was up in the milligrams. It seems like.
All right, fine. But, well, of course, what do you call it again?
Afrin.
Afrin, what is it?
It's a nasal inhaler? Spray. It's very, very popular.
I see.
Okay. Advertised all over TV and everything. But I started looking at labels after that. You can't read what's on the bottle or the can or whatever. You have to get that little piece of paper out, and they'll tell you that if it has mercury in it.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Christy?
I can't really hear.
Oh, but basically, Coy is calling from Kansas City. He said there's something called aspirin.
No, A-F-R-I-N, Afrin.
Afrin. Apparently, it's some sort of a nasal spray.
Very common over-the-counter spray.
It's got dimerythal in it.
And it's got mercury in it. And he had been using it for a long, long time before he suddenly looked at the label, and I guess he's not using it anymore. Anyway, thanks so much for giving us a heads up on that, Coy.
Well, see what happens. You're getting it from all kind of different sources. It's in more things than you'd even believe.
Oh, yeah, so, you sure are. You're right. Thanks so much for calling.
Bye-bye.
All right. I'm sorry, Christy. What were you saying?
I was just saying that, you know, it's an amazing thing how many medications that they get the stuff in. We have a local little bedroom community of Seattle here where, the water department was pretty anxious about the high mercury levels, but guess what else they found? They also found high levels of pharmaceuticals in the drinking water, you know. And, you know, of course, this is something that I would expect to be on the front page of the Seattle Times, but it's not. No one seems to know unless you're a water commissioner or you know a water commissioner. They don't seem to try and keep it a secret at that level. But the press just hasn't been covering these things. And, you know, here you're showering in this stuff, and people don't know enough to have maybe get bottled water in glass because we've got dioxins leaching off the plastic. And all of these things interact with mercury because they call it the living metal because it has this interaction with so many things. With other metals, for example, it'll exacerbate lead or arsenic or beryllium by about 100 times, not just twice, if they're mixed together. So your symptomologies will get much more extreme. And, of course, we're looking at neurotoxins, so the brain is what's affected. in many cases, we've got huge brain symptoms, and people wonder why these people are going crazy. And, I don't know about you, but when I was young and you know, before the 70s, we didn't have people going nuts like they are going. Every night on the news, there's somebody who's gone crazy. And they do crazy things.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think we live in a society that's losing its moral foundation. But I also believe that many of these chemicals can have a profound impact, you know, on the brain. And in fact, our good friend Dr. Russell Blaylock has written, has put together a DVD on nutrition and behavior. That's nutrition and behavior, just showing the effect of nutrition on the behavior of people. Add to that the effect of mercury on the brain, and the destruction of brain cells with mercury, and you can see why we have so many problems today. Our guest has been Christy Diamond, and we're talking about her video, Mercury, the Slow Death. Well, Mercury, pardon me, Christy, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I guess tonight I'd like to just tell the listening public that we have something very wrong going on in our country, and I didn't start out looking for that. I was looking for mercury, and I found that we have an administration who is not telling us the truth. I do believe that our country has been hijacked already, and they're going to great lengths to tell us that everything's just the way it always has been, and part of that plan is to introduce a neurotoxin into our food, into our environment, into our teeth through vaccines and medications. And it would pay for people to sit up and take notice, because things are not the same as they were.
And I think for our listeners out there, the challenge would be begin to investigate this. You go to the IAOTM, the International Association of Oral and Medical Toxicology, and get the information. Find out if there really is a danger in the mercury in your teeth. Is there danger in the mercury in many of the medications that you're taking? Is there danger in your influenza shot? Is there mercury there? And what impact does it have on your brain? Do not trust the government, and do not trust government bureaucrats. Many times they're motivated by greed. Many times they're motivated by wanting to get ahead. And many times, and I fear this is maybe present more often than we suspect, there are wicked and evil people out there who have a different worldview and who would really want to destroy the minds of our children and our elderly. How many there are, I don't know, but all of the scientific studies show the tremendous toxicity of mercury products. So why do they insist on leaving them in our vaccines, especially the influenza vaccine? Why would they want to give it to a pregnant woman in the first trimester when there's not one bit of evidence that influenza in the first trimester, or even influenza during a pregnancy with a pregnant woman, is a serious matter? So there must be another agenda. If influenza is not a problem, then why are they insisting on giving a toxic substance that can destroy the mind of an unborn child? Well, you're going to have to answer those questions yourself. Perhaps you'll come to the same conclusion that Cindy and I have. Cindy, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure having you here with us on Radio Liberty, and look forward to getting you on other programs. Looking forward to seeing that new DVD of yours.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I always enjoy it.
Good night. God bless.
God bless you, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time when we have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you believe that we've got real problems, you'd like to help us as we reach out 5 hours every day. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do carry a great deal of information on mercury. We have a book called Evidence of Harm. That's Evidence of Harm. It's a story of autistic children. We have a 4-tape set on autism. We have 2 4-tape sets on mercury and mercury toxicity. We have Cindy's excellent DVD. It's called Mercury, a Slow Death. And now we've added to our armamentarium the new DVD by Dr. Ayoub. Pardon me, actually, I should say VHS. And it's you'll just have to call and ask for Dr. Ayoub's, A-Y-O-U-B, Dr. Ayoub's VHS on Mercury. You'll find it's fascinating. And, of course, Christy has done a tremendous job of getting this material together. We will be carrying her new DVD on the Institute of Medicine and the other material she puts out, because we need to have this information in your hands so that you can copy it and get it in other people's hands. Certainly anything we have produced, you're welcome to copy, as long as you're not making a profit on it. Get people to understand what they're doing to the minds of our children. Get them to understand what they're doing to the minds of our elderly. And if you have somebody in the older age group and the doctor is encouraging them to get an influenza shot, just explain to them about the dramatic increase, a thousandfold increase in the incidence of Alzheimer's disease. Now, we've done some interesting studies and programs recently with Dr. Blaylock, going into the fact that apparently there are some things that can be done to reverse the process of Alzheimer's disease. But, of course, you have to get the mercury out of the system, you have to chelate it out, and then you have to protect the brain. And there are all sorts of things that really can do that. The body has a wonderful reparative capacity. And so if you want more information, you might want to think about getting our interview with Dr. Blaylock. Deals with mercury. We did that about two or three weeks ago. And then, of course, we hope that you'll go to our website at www.radioliberty.com, and you'll certainly want to get our material on fluoride. You'll want to get our material on aspartame and MSG. You'll want to get our material on planned population reduction. That's a talk we gave, planned population reduction, where we go into the fact that there is a master plan to kill off over 90% of the world's population. Great American heroes like Jacques Cousteau, interviewed in the UNESCO Courier in November of 1991, said, we're going to have to eliminate 365,000 people a day. We're going to have to eliminate 365,000 people a day. If you find that difficult to believe, after all, if that was true, why wouldn't Rush Limbaugh have told us that? Well, we'd be glad to send you a copy of the page from the UNESCO Courier, where Jacques Cousteau is quoted as saying that, and not a word in the controlled media. Because, ladies and gentlemen, the media in America is controlled. And because of that, your life and the life of your children, your family, are endangered today. Again, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. The book, Evidence of Harm, the 4-tape set on autism, the 4-tape sets on mercury, Cindy's a video called Mercury, a Slow Death, and then Dr. Ayoub's new VHS. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. And so, until tomorrow at the same time, we'll be back again, hopefully on the same station. May the Lord be with you.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. This is Joyce, and Dave is on business elsewhere, so we get to talk about the news today. I thank you for joining us. If you have not turned on your television set, well, here's what you're going to hear. The security alert has been raised to red on planes coming from the UK to the US, and possibly here in the US also. You need 2 hours to get to the airport, and it's total chaos. Here's what happened, allegedly. I'll tell you the short version of it before the break. There was a plan in the UK that was going operational. Now, that term concerns me a whole lot. It wasn't a real plan, but it was going operational. So, for whatever that means, they thought they needed to swoop in and arrest some 21 people. Because there was an alleged conspiracy plot, that was the statement made by Scotland Yard, to blow up several aircraft coming from the UK to the US in flight midway. I tell you, there's a lot of people at airports right now that are going to be upset when they get to the airport and find out they're going to be hand searched. There are no liquids to be taken on board, and you must dump out all your cosmetics or you can't go on the plane if they're in your carry-on bag. In the UK, it's even worse. There's no carry-ons allowed anymore. No purses. You can have a billfold with your government ID, and that's about it. That's the story. It's a huge story, and it's been on the news since about 4 a.m. this morning, and it's been nonstop. It's huge. It's huge. It's real. And, oh, listeners, they said that. This is the real deal. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, if this is the real deal, were the other things a real deal also, or is this the only real deal? I don't know. And if they say this is the real deal and the other ones were real deals also, does that mean that none of them are real deals? I don't know. But I do want to give you the statement that was made by Homeland Security, which I could not believe. I had to call Dave and tell him this one. Anyway, this is the major story in the news today. Other than that, yesterday, of course, the major news was that was the worst day for Israel. Every day, do you notice that? Every day is the worst day so far. Do they not realize they're saying that every single day? More people killed in the IDF forces yesterday than ever before. And they announced their plans that they were going in to Lebanon with ground troops. We're going in. We're going to go in. Yep. In a few hours, we're going in. Well, what kind of army tells the enemy we're coming? I don't know. I understand they're wanting all the civilians to get out of the way. I think by this point they've gotten the hint. You know, with 700 bombs later, airstrikes later, I think they've gotten the hint that there's a war going on. But why do they announce their plans on TV? I mean, they call a news conference, announce it on CNN, and I don't get this. Well, there's a lot of people upset. In Chicago, I learned yesterday that there are Jews for Peace that are aligning themselves against the Zionist Jews. They are demonstrating, and it is not a pretty situation. My goodness, I don't recall seeing that on television, and I don't think that you will either. We learned the other day there's a Jews for Peace group out in California forming. We're going to be right back after this 3-minute break with lots of news you won't hear anywhere else. And we do have new info on soy. We'll be right back. Stay tuned to this 3-minute break. This is Joyce. This is The Power.
Wake up! Wake up! They're coming! They're coming now! Wake up! What if Paul Revere had given his midnight warning and no one had listened? Today, a warning has been sounded by doctors, farmers, military officers, broadcasters, professors, and other professionals joining together to warn America of an attack from within. One Nation Under Siege is the new documentary from the director of 9/11 In Plain Sight and Beyond Treason. It's over 3 hours on two DVDs and features Charlotte Iserby, Dr. Rima Lebo, Derry Brownfield, Jim Mars, Dr. Stan Monteith, Joyce Riley, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Major General Albert Stubblebine, Dave Von Kleist, Joan Vian, and others discussing history revision, vaccines, RFIDs, biochips, military medical experiments, 9/11, the UN global agenda, and the planned destruction of America. Order online at undersiegemovie.com or call 877-817-9829. Over 3 hours of in-depth interviews for only $24.95. Visit undersiegemovie.com or call 877-817-9829. The warning is being given again. Are you listening?
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior now with the Total Transformation, the program that helps stop defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. Your child will listen to you again. I guarantee it.
Change your child's behavior now with the Total Transformation. Call now. 1-800-373-0402. 1-800-373-0402.
When my son started having behavior problems, the Total Transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Do you need an instruction manual for your kid? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior now with the Total Transformation, the program that helps stop defiance and backtalking. Your child will listen to you again. I guarantee it.
Call now. 1-800-373-0402. 1-800-373-0402.
United States Pharmacopeia, USP, sets the standard for most food supplements and are used in over 95% of all vitamin and mineral supplements in the world. The problem is that these products have never appeared in any living tissue. They're created in laboratories and are not recognizable to the body's metabolism. Grown by Nature products are different because they use renatured ingredients, proprietary blends of essential vitamins and minerals with cofactors of proteins, lipids, and complex carbohydrates. Over 50 studies have been conducted on renatured nutrients, and over 20 have been published in peer-reviewed journals proclaiming their superiority. As a result, Grown by Nature vitamins and supplements are now recognized as simply the best available. Call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829 and order your Grown by Nature products today. We are what we eat, and since we are of nature, we should eat foods in their natural form. Only Grown by Nature offers a full line of renatured nutrients. Call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829 because not all products are grown by nature, but they should be.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Onquist.
And Joyce Riley.
And we all know that knowledge is power. That's why we call this
the Power Hour. Just when I thought I got to do the program by myself, he's back.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors of this radio station, or those neocons in charge of promulgating the propaganda.
Oh. Welcome to the Power Hour, everybody. This is Joyce Riley.
And this is Dave Von Kleist. Good morning, sweetie.
Hi, good morning. Just when I thought I was going to have just me and Scott doing the show today, here you come. Hey, by the way, you've got a lot of background noise there. I mean, a lot.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, obviously, I'm on a cell phone right now, and I just had to call in with all the news about the 21 terrorists being arrested over there in the United Kingdom with a supposed plot to blow up multiple airliners in mid-flight and create a disaster that would make 9/11 pale in comparison. I just come from the airport, and at KCI Airport, of course, for those of the folks out there that are travelers, and if they've ever been to KCI, you know that airport is a pretty easy airport to get in and out of.
You're talking about the Kansas City Airport.
That's correct, but not today.
Really?
There are lines, although they're not lines like you'd see in Chicago or New York or Boston or anything like that, but they do have very heightened and increased security. Of course, they're confiscating anything like toothpaste or lip balm or any liquid.
No.
They're just taking everything. And, of course, I have to stop and think about people that have infants. What about the baby formula? What about the people that have to have insulin with them? There are certain individuals, of course, that have to have certain things, and they say that they're making some very few exceptions. But I can't help but think of the scenario of boiling the frog. I mean, we have a horrendous situation here, and I hate to be such a cynic, but I have to doubt everything that I hear these days. I don't know whether this is a real plot. Is this real, or is it Memorex? I just don't have a clue, and it's a shame that that things are the way they are now for all the people that have to travel around this country.
I know, for dragging them through this mud the way they are. They're doing hand searches in the UK right now. And, Dave, we learned that they're taking away, those remote control little key tabs that you use to get into your car?
Yes.
They're confiscating those because they contain a transmitter.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They only cost about $75 to $100 a piece. And imagine, what they're doing to people. They are pushing them over the edge.
Well, they say that going through the security line and you're getting ready to check your luggage, they say that if you have an item like that, you can put it in your luggage and have it checked on with baggage, but you can't carry it on. Well, that's okay for a lot of the folks that do have baggage, but many people travel light. Whenever I travel, I try not to have something to check on. I like to travel with just my carry-on, and if I've got a set of keys with one of those little keychain transmitters, I'm going to be basically, up the creek without a paddle. I'm not going to have that when I get home.
That's right. And among a lot of other things that you won't have. You won't have any cologne. You won't have any lotions. You won't have any toothpaste. I mean, this is absolutely unbelievable. Hey, you've got so much background noise, Dave. If you don't mind, I know that I appreciate the airport report, but it's just That's almost too hard to hear you.
I understand, but I just wanted to give you a first-hand report of what's going on at one of the airports here. It really is a tremendous inconvenience for a lot of travelers and, all over a reported terrorist plot. I was just listening to one of the radio talk shows locally here, and one of the callers said, well, all of these terrorists were supposedly from Pakistan, so what we ought to do is just go over and bomb Pakistan, clear the deck, and get rid of everybody.
Are you serious?
That's what one of the callers said, and I certainly hope that that is not the mindset of many of the other listeners. I'll clear the line here.
Hey.
Anyway, you have a good show, and hey, folks, you take good care of her while I'm away.
I'll see you a little later. Thanks a lot, Dave. I appreciate the phone call today. Yeah. Thank you very much. That was a report, a very noisy report. I do apologize, ladies and gentlemen. From the Kansas City airport, and it is normally a very sleepy little airport that is so easy to get in and out of, but not today. Now, again, if you're just tuning in, they have raised the threat level to orange and red. They're going to be having a news conference. Of course, whenever Gonzalez gets on and does a news conference, that's when my BS detector goes off. I hate to tell you that, but that's kind of the way I look at it, because they've always got this, we got him, we got him, we got him just in time. They just learned how to spell, I don't know, and they got him. Well, anyway, the airport is in chaos, especially in the UK. They have canceled a lot of flights. They closed down Heathrow. I don't know if it's still closed down or not, but several planes were threatened with an in-flight explosion, including United, Continental, and American. No liquids of any kind are allowed. They did tell us that, ladies and gentlemen, this one is the real deal. Now, I hope your response is just the same as mine. What were the other ones if this is the real deal? Scotland Yard reported that this is an alleged conspiracy. They're reporting. Scotland Yard's reporting. Wait a minute. I would hope that you would know that it was a real one when you go and do all this kind of theatrics to the people that are trying to leave at the airports. I mean, this is horrendous. They're holding now 21 people. They're holding them. They haven't arrested them. They're holding them because they had plans allegedly to blow up 6 to 10 aircraft in air. And they said they will not give out any information as to who these people are. However, they are hiding behind their religion. Oh, let's figure what that one means. Like, we are so stupid to figure that one out. But they did tell us that the one thing they do know is it was Al-Qaeda. Isn't that amazing? They knew that 15 minutes after, or 21 minutes after, two planes hit the towers. They knew it immediately that it had the earmark of Al-Qaeda on it. All passengers coming from the UK must be hand-searched. No wheelchairs other than airport wheelchairs. Now, that's in the U.S. also, and I don't think people realize what an inconvenience that is, because there are people who have to have their own wheelchair. And to be transferred into another wheelchair sometimes is impossible because of the equipment that they have, such as oxygen or whatever. So, now, only airport wheelchairs. Only milk for babies, and you must test the milk before it goes on the aircraft. Now, they didn't say how you test it, but I don't know if it has to be sent to a lab or what, but no purses, no garment bags coming from the UK. Now, here is the statement. The terror plot was foiled. However, when asked about this, Homeland Security's response was, and they did this with a straight face on the television today. Here is what Homeland Security had to say in response to all of this. Well, we don't know what we don't know. Oh, are they trying to drive us mad with statements like that? The reporter from Homeland Security made this statement saying, well, the only comment that Homeland Security would make today was, we don't know what we don't know. Well, thank you, Donald Rumsfeld. You've passed on the non-speak or the new-speak to everyone. Is this part of the plan? Because you know, listeners, that not one statement ever makes it out unless it's approved. Well, here's something else that is approved. The way they got you to remember what happened and how bad it was on 9/11 was to call it 9/11 and have it happen on 9/11. Listen to this story that came from the Herald Sun in Australia. This is a correspondent in Washington writing. 30% of Americans cannot say in what year the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks occurred at the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Now, notice the way they phrased this. They did occur, and they did happen at the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, the terrorist attacks. However, 30% of the people cannot remember what year it happened. While the country is preparing to commemorate the fifth anniversary of the attacks that claimed nearly 3,000 lives and shocked the world, 95% of Americans questioned in the poll were able to remember the month and the day of the attacks. I wonder why. They named it 9/11. That's pretty easy. 9/11, right? 9/11, 9/11. But when asked what year 9/11 occurred, only 30% of the people in this country that were asked could give a response or knew the correct answer. Of that group, 6% gave an earlier year, 8% gave a later year, and 16% admitted they had no idea whatever. The memory black hole is essentially the problem of the older crowd. 48% of those who did not know were between the ages of 55 and 64. 47% were older than 65, the poll shows. Now see, this is a poll to find out how well they did their job. The post-telephone survey was carried out July 21st to 24th among 1,002 randomly selected adults. The margin of error is plus or minus 3 percentage points. So, their deal worked. That's what they want you to know. Now, the other major story is they're going into Lebanon. They're going into Lebanon. They're telling everybody, we're going into Lebanon. We're coming. We're coming. That is a really neat maneuver, if you ask me. Tell them all what you're going to do, and that precludes the surprise attack. Is this a real deal? I don't think so, listeners. We'll be right back after this four-minute break. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. It's all agenda. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Do you know the truth about breast cancer? Do you realize that the race for the cure is over? The best kept secret in the world today is that now it is possible to kill cancer without personal suffering, mutilation, and poisoning of your entire system. Now, it's cancer's turn to die with Lays Med Inc.'s patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at a physician's office. Star War technology at its best. For more information, call 702-953-0267 or visit www.laysmedinc.com or call 702-953-0267.
Here it is, folks, the 2006 Red Book, the most comprehensive edition ever published. Latest Resources believes our clients should be as informed as possible. It includes the history of U.S. coins, the actual mintages, the grading standards. Learn the stability of real money. Protect yourself from fiat currencies. They are instruments of debt. Feel the comfort and safety of real money. Midas will send you the 2006 Red Book and a genuine silver dollar for just $22.95 delivered. Call Midas today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237. Don't be lost in a sea of confusion. Get the 2006 Red Book. Help steer your own financial ship. Call Midas now, 1-800-686-2237.
September 11th, 2001 changed the world, and the world is now realizing that the official story of that infamous day just doesn't make sense. The overwhelming majority of Americans believe that there is a government cover-up, according to a CNN poll. 9/11 in plain sight, the director's cut is a compilation of unaltered news footage and photos from major networks and publications that raises questions that officials dare not ask, let alone answer. The worldwide firestorm of questions raised has forced some into a position of desperation damage control to keep this documentary from being seen or accepted by the masses. Why have these efforts been made to keep you from seeing this documentary and simply asking common sense questions? Find out. You must see 9/11 in plain sight, the director's cut, and share it with as many people as possible. Call 877-817-9829 to order your copy. That's 877-817-9829. Unless these questions are answered honestly, the world could be plunged into a third world war. Stop this madness. Call 877-817-9829 today and order your copy of 9/11 in plain sight, the director's cut.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we've seen. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, few months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at www.heartdrop.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822. 928-8822.
Our things freer in America today than they were a couple years ago.
Welcome back to the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. Davon Feist was on the scene at the Kansas City airport. He was letting you know that it is a mess there, and it's normally never a mess at the Kansas City airport. It's pretty small, pretty easy to get into, but not today. And there, of course, is between an orange and a red alert. Red in the UK, we're not sure if it's orange in the US or not, but what is it? What difference does it make anyway? There is a propaganda war that Israel is creating. It's you talk about playing with somebody's head. The Israeli arsenal now is said to include phone messages and hacked TV. Now, this appeared yesterday, and I appreciate us getting a copy of this from a Philadelphia Inquirer from Nina. Hassan al-Haraki answered his phone one evening And he says he heard a deep voice asking, "How long will you go on supporting the gang of Hassan Nasrallah?" It was, he believes, Israel calling with a message denouncing Hezbollah and its leader. Cell phones and landlines across Lebanon have been ringing with automated recorded messages, part of what appears to be a propaganda war. The campaign has given the impression that Israelis are everywhere, not just in the warplanes overhead or on the front lines in the ground battle against Hezbollah. But think about it, listeners. What would that do to you? If you thought you were safe in your home avoiding all those bombs overhead and you get this phone call, "Hey, Hassan, we're watching you," basically. Hackers broke into Hezbollah's Al-Manar TV transmission, and the Lebanese press is dotted with reports of Israeli commandos turning up the places far from the front in the north, in the south. You know what I'd like? I'd like for us to be able to break into Fox News. Wouldn't that be cool? Wouldn't that be nice if we were able to get our message on TV the way they can just break into Hezbollah TV? Well, this is the beginning of the cell phone war between Israel and Hezbollah. Can you believe that? The cellular and landlines have become ingredients of the modern psychological and propaganda wars, joining the other tools like the radio, TV, flyers, and the Internet. Now, this guy says that he received a call as well, this time addressing Nasrallah, you know, who's allegedly the head of the alleged Hezbollah, which I'm sure is real, but how do we know anyway? "Hassan," the voice said, "have you realized yet that the Israeli army is not as delicate as a spider's web? It's a web of steel that will strangle you." Now, that's a message this guy got on his phone. Okay, let's imagine what would happen if the United States had this done to the people that live here. Imagine you're safe in your little home and you get a phone call saying, "Marvin, why aren't you going to take that vaccine?" Think about it. Think how eerie that would be to people that live alone or people that are frightened anyway. Well, typically, they say that those who claim to have received calls, the calls alert, are started in the afternoon and quite frequently in the middle of the night. A 0000 number flashes on the phone screen indicating an international call. There's a variety of messages all seeking to break the Lebanese public from Hezbollah. But the calls have come to Lebanese regardless of their stance, including the Christians and to their landlines at offices, saying, "This is the state of Israel. This resistance is forcing you to stay at home like rats." I am amazed. Think about how eerie this would be. One person said the message posed questions like, "Who is it that's putting your life in danger? Who is using you as a human shield?" During a recent primetime newscast on Al-Manar TV that was airing footage of Nasrallah, viewers suddenly saw Hezbollah members beware, and that was in quotes, "Hezbollah members beware," splashed across his turban. Al-Manar is Hezbollah's main propaganda arm, received throughout the Arab world. It can be picked up in Israel by dishes tuned to Arab satellites, but there has been no sign of Hezbollah propaganda detected in Israel. Ibrahim Farhat, head of public relations at Al-Manar and Israel, had said that Israel had been jamming and hacking into Al-Manar and other TV stations and satellite stations almost every day, especially in coastal areas. "They're just trying to scare people," he said. "We don't give it any importance." Well, I don't know. I bet some little grandmother staying at home is probably going to be pretty scared. But this is an interesting little turn of events. Could it happen in the U.S.? Of course it could. They got the technology. They've got it over here. How about, "Hey, Karen, why don't you register your cows?" We'll be right back after this 3-minute break. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. It's getting weird, listeners.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
September 11th, 2001 changed the world, and the world is now realizing that the official story of that infamous day just doesn't make sense. The overwhelming majority of Americans believe that there is a government cover-up, according to a CNN poll. 9/11 in plain sight, the director's cut is a compilation of unaltered news footage and photos from major networks and publications that raises questions that officials dare not ask, let alone answer. The worldwide firestorm of questions raised has forced some into a position of desperation damage control to keep this documentary from being seen or accepted by the masses. Why have these efforts been made to keep you from seeing this documentary and simply asking common sense questions? Find out. You must see 9/11 in plain sight, the director's cut, and share it with as many people as possible. Call 877-817-9829 to order your copy. That's 877-817-9829. Unless these questions are answered honestly, the world could be plunged into a third world war. Stop this madness. Call 877-817-9829 today and order your copy of 9/11 in plain sight, the director's cut.
Did you know you have been cheated? You owe no debt on your bank-issued credit cards. You heard that right. You owe no debt on your bank-issued credit cards. You don't have to pay them off. The banks are defrauding you. Now is the time to fight back. You can completely wipe out your credit card debt fast. The procedure is easy and everything is done legally and within the law. We have better than a 90% success rate. Check out 1-2-3nodebt.com. The process is simple and is non-judicial. It's an easy letter-writing process that can be done by anyone with a personal computer. With our package, you also get the Credit Secrets Bible, loaded with valuable information about credit restoration and credit repair and much, much more. Don't let the banksters cheat you. Fight back, America. Stop the fraud. Stop the ripoff. Learn the truth. 1-2-3nodebt.com. Come over and get our rock-solid technology that wipes out debt without bankruptcy. It's really quite easy. Go to 1-2-3nodebt.com. Live debt-free now. You lose nothing but the debt.
According to the American Diabetes Association, more than 18 million people in the U.S. have diabetes. Most people with diabetes have risk factors such as obesity, high blood pressure, and cholesterol, which increase their risk for heart disease. For example, more than 65% of people with diabetes die from heart disease or stroke. Finding out you or your loved ones have diabetes can be scary. This is why, as your trusted online partner in health, we are committed to bringing you products that help you make informed decisions about your health. At researchherbs.com, you can learn more about GlucoCare, a highly effective and safe natural herbal supplement formulated specifically to help maintain optimal blood sugar levels. As with all products featured on researchherbs.com, GlucoCare is the result of several years of rigorous development and is backed by numerous clinical trials and experimental studies. Visit us online at researchherbs.com or call 1-800-845-3841 to learn more. That's 1-800-845-3841.
Welcome back to the Power Hour. This is Joyce. They won't be joining us today. And remember, rest assured, Homeland Security says that all of this is because we don't know what we don't know. That absolutely made me come unhooked when I heard that. But you know what? I realized they wanted me to come unhooked when I heard that. So I'm not going to come unhooked. You know what? They're not going to have their way with us. People are rising up. Enough people are saying not no, but heck no, and they are just waiting, and it is going to happen. I guarantee you. If you have a Swiss bank account, or if you know someone who has a Swiss bank account, well, good luck. Because the Swiss court has now approved the U.S.'s request for bank records of alleged terror financiers. In other words, if you have a Swiss bank account, you probably have all the information that's gone back to the U.S. government. Swiss authorities will provide the U.S. with details from bank accounts U.S. investigations suspect, or U.S. investigators suspect of being used for terrorist funding. In other words, if they think you have done something, they can take your account, open it up, give it to the U.S., and let them know everything about your financial status. Now, see, a lot of people had Swiss bank accounts because they didn't want the U.S. government into their business. And that's why they went over there and did it in the first place. Well, should they be allowed to have a foreign bank account? Well, I kind of think so. I don't have any, but I kind of think if somebody wants to, they should be allowed to. Well, Now, because of terrorism, they can't do that. So all they have to do is say it might be a terrorist funding. Ministry spokesperson Falco Galli said the documents will be handed over this month now that Switzerland's highest court has approved the transfer. Now, you know that they have been wanting to get access to all offshore accounts. Well, excuse me, except for the Bush administration and Henry Kissinger and, well, those people, they won't need to because those are good guys, you see. But now the federal government has the right to get anything they want just by saying, they were allegedly funding a terrorist group. Well, in that ruling that was disclosed Wednesday, the federal tribunal, wait a minute, the federal tribunal approved the request of the U.S. Attorney's Office of the Eastern District of Virginia, which has been pending since 2002 as part of an investigation into money laundering and support of terrorist activities. The U.S. prosecutor requested the account information as part of an investigation into some 100 charitable organizations which are providing, by means of complex financial transactions, support to terrorist operations. Allegedly, listeners, remember that. The United States suspects the organizations of having links to al-Qaeda, Hamas, and the Palestinian Jihad, said the ruling, handed down July 4th. July 4th, wait a minute. Were our courts in session on July 4th? I don't know. Seems to me that was like a holiday, but maybe if you want to do secret business, you do it on holidays. And it was kept secret until the court released it on Wednesday. None of the individuals involved in the U.S. investigation were identified. The U.S. said more than $26 million was transferred to entities in the British Isle of Man owning bank accounts in Switzerland. The money was then given to charitable organizations. You know what? I would be fearful of giving to the Salvation Army right now. Because if they were ever found to have known how to spell Al-Qaeda, they just might come back and have justification to say, all right, everybody who donated to the Salvation Army, Goodwill, or the local animal shelter, well, your information is ours. See, they don't have to have any justification, any reasoning other than we're from the Department of Homeland Security, and of course we don't know what we don't know. We're going to have to use that one for a while, and I wish I could get, if anybody can get the clip of that on TV, please get it to me. My AV guy, my audiovisual and audio technical person is gone today, or this morning, so I couldn't get that, but I would appreciate it very much if you would let me know. If you find that clip that says, we don't know what we don't know. Oh, you guys are good. Man, are you good. We need to give you a few more gazillion dollars to entrap us. Well, there is evidence. I'm going to change the subject right now because I am really not very happy about all this. But then that's the purpose of it, to make us so unhappy and to make us so angry that we can't focus. But you know what? We can focus here at the Power Hour. Though they shut off our telephone lines, our 800 lines, we don't know what happened. They can't figure it out at the phone company. So we're asking our listeners to please utilize the other number. And that other number is 573-378-6049. 573-378-6049. Please use that number to order from the Power Hour. And we do need your support. And I thank all of you who ordered yesterday. We really need some help to catch up because we have been laid pretty low, and that's their goal. But you know what? They're not going to get us. We got lots of plans, but we do need your support right now. And I do ask you more than ever to please support the Power Hour this week. 573-378-6049 is the number to call, so you can place your order at the Power Hour. And remember, today, Ron Nashinsky is going to be talking about clay. He wrote a book called, I believe it's The Healing Power of Clay. He will be on today because he really, really believes in it. He doesn't sell it, so he can say whatever he wants about clay. And you might actually hear what clay does today because, as you know, I can't say it now, and other people can't say it, but people who have no direct ties, according to the FDA, can talk about these items. So he'll be talking about clay. I would get your tapes ready for this one. Those of you who have some clay, you probably are going to learn some new uses for it. Those of you who don't have clay are going to want to get it. You talk about a survival item. Well, I don't know if I can even say that. More evidence that soy is not as healthy as originally believed. Well, good red wine is good for you. Red wine is bad for you. Coffee is good for you. Well, we don't know. We'll figure it out one of these years. Well, soy, it appears now, is not as good as the, you know, they put it up as the primo health product, right, at health food stores. They had practically stores just full of soy. Animals are getting it. Birds are getting it. People are getting it. Well, this fascinating report in the UK Guardian Limited details some of the earliest evidence now that soy can be harmful to your health. Now, one investigation began when a multimillionaire lawyer, Richard James, became convinced that soybeans were killing his red parrots. Parrots do not eat soy in the wild, but a high-protein feed containing soy had been marketed as a new miracle bird food. And when Mr. James fed it to his parrots, however, the birds became infertile, they died, or they aged prematurely. None of those three being very good things that you'd want to happen to you. Researchers initially thought that James must be mistaken about the cause, but when he financed an exhaustive study of soy, they found that soy contains toxins and disruptive plant estrogens, and they can also damage the thyroid. So, not only do they cause you to become infertile, die, or age prematurely, you also have thyroid damage. James' lobbying gradually forced governments to investigate, and in 2002, the British government concluded that there was very little evidence for the supposed health benefits of soy, and a good deal of evidence of its risks. Wait a second, did you hear that? In 2002, the British government concluded there was little evidence for health effects, but they didn't bother to tell you, did they? Soy's health claims are usually based on the lower rates of heart disease and certain cancers in East Asian populations. However, here is the key they should have told you. Asians do not actually eat as much soy as had been generally assumed. And what they do eat tends to be fermented for long periods. Fermentation considerably reduces the levels of dangerous isoflavones in soy. Oh, they did a study showing Asian people live longer, are more healthy because they eat soy. Oops. Oh, we forgot to tell you they don't eat soy beans. And we've known it since 2002, but we're not going to tell you about that. They eat only the fermented soy, such as is in Bragg's Liquid Aminos. It is fermented soy. There is nothing bad about it. It is not genetically created. And that's the big problem, is that 95% of all the soybeans are genetically altered. But if you use Bragg's Liquid Aminos, you're safe, because I contacted the company. No problem. There are now decades worth of evidence that consuming soy is harmful to your health. Thousands of studies link soy foods to malnutrition, digestive stress, immune system breakdown, thyroid dysfunction, cognitive decline, and a lot of people, cognitive meaning thinking skills, a lot of people are having problems thinking, you know, that blurry, kind of foggy feeling. Well, you can thank your local soybean for that. Reproductive disorders, infertility, and a host of other problems. The exception, of course, is the truly traditional way of preparing it or fermenting it. Isn't that amazing? The Asians knew all along. Non-fermented soy products contain a number of potentially health-disrupting anti-nutrients. Oh, man, that's what you need. Anti-nutrients, such as phytic acid. That's spelled P-H-Y-T-I-C. You would be wisest to avoid any such foods. And I have to tell you, one of the worst things you can do is give soy infant formula. In fact, Dr. Mercola, he goes as far to say this. Now, I would not want to tangle with the soy baby formula makers, but he does. So I'm going to give him all the credit for this statement right now. Dr. Mercola says, soy infant formula in particular should never be used as it can damage your infant. And here's what it will do. According to Dr. Mercola, so any of the attorneys listening from the beverage industry that uses soy for babies, it will adversely affect hormone levels as it has been associated with reduced testosterone levels. We wonder why there are more people seemingly gay coming out of the closet. Well, with the plastics industry and the testosterone levels being reduced, I wonder why. It will impair thyroid function through isoflavones present in the formula. Will increase the risk of behavioral problems. But see, that's a good deal, though. Because once they can, you know, the pharmaceutical companies make soy beverages for the babies. So once they give them the soy formula, baby formula, then they can give them the Ritalin to take care of the behavioral problem. Works really well for them. It exposes infants up to 2,000 times higher estrogen content. 2,000 times higher estrogen content. Now, forgive my cynic attitude here, but it looks like if you wanted to change your child's sexual behavior from male to female, well, what would you do? Give them estrogen? Yes. What do they do when they do sex change operations? They give them estrogen. Well, you might just want to give your baby 2,000 times higher estrogen content. Now, I'm sorry to say this to the parents that are listening right now and these mothers that are right now feeding their babies soy formula, but I didn't create it. There are certain potentially higher concentrations of aluminum and manganese in soy formulas. Makes you wonder why the world soy population, according to the Chicago Board of Trade, has exploded to some 270 metric tons. A ninefold increase over the past four decades alone. Perhaps it's because American soy producers spend as much as $80 million to promote soy worldwide. Or possibly it's because American soybean farmers received $13 billion in subsidies. They are encouraging farmers to grow soybeans to make us sick, to be able to medicate us more. That's my editorial comment. Unfortunately, a new process recently launched by Solae, S-O-L-A-E, combines non-fermented soy, meat, and vegetable protein in such a way that you are not going to even be able to discern the fake food from the real thing, meaning that even more concealed soy will probably break into the American diet. Yet another important reason to stay away from processed foods altogether. Solae, S-O-L-A-E. Limited Liability Corporation, you can thank them for hiding soy. So now, when you go to the store, check and see if there is soy. And it's not, you know, a lot of people think, oh, there's just a little bit of soy in this. Well, cumulatively, how much do you think you're getting? That's why the Power Hour decided to use Innerfood and coconut here, because there is no soy added to it. It's hard to find protein drinks or green drinks without soy in it. They want to doctor it up and give you all the other junk. We don't want that. We want the spirulina. We want the chlorella. We want the good stuff. And no, it does not taste like a fruit smoothie. You have to add some stevia to it to make it taste like a fruit smoothie. Because it is the green stuff, and that's exactly what we want at the Power Hour. So please, if you have not tried Innerfood and you need some nutrition, which I don't know of anybody that does not, call 573-378-6049. 573-378-6049. Indian state bans sale of manufacture of Coke and Pepsi sodas. The southern Indian state of Kerala banned the sale of manufacture of Coke, Pepsi, Sprite, and other soft drinks made by the Indian subsidiaries of Coca-Cola and PepsiCo. At least four Indian states, we're talking about real India, the country of India, at least four Indian states have banned the sale of the soft drinks at schools, colleges, and government offices after an independent research group in New Delhi last week claimed they contained very high levels of pesticide residue. Well, I'm sure that would never, ever happen here, correct? Never happen here. Oh, and in the "oh, we are so stupid" category, another stolen laptop. You know, I am not believing these stolen laptop stories because they have that little GPS detector. If they didn't want them stolen, they would put that low jack for computers on there. But, oh, we are so stupid. A government computer loaded with approximately 133,000 drivers and pilots' records. Do you notice how it's always one of each? Let's get the veterans today. Then we'll get the driver's licenses next time. Then we'll get the credit card people that... Listeners, it's all by design. We're going to be right back after this three-minute break. Stay tuned to The Power Hour.
People who use supplements are learning more about herbs and their effectiveness, and so are the people who do the research and make the supplements. Turmeric has been long known to be a balancing and detoxifying herb, and curcumin is the active part of turmeric. Curcumin 98 is 98% curcumin, and ongoing studies are showing that curcumin is helping people who suffer from acne, allergies, autoimmune disorders, burns, chickenpox, diabetes, liver damage, rashes, tumors, ulcers, eye problems, multiple sclerosis, and more. Testimonies are rolling in from folks who've tried curcumin, and the results are some of the best we've ever seen. There are 500 milligrams of curcumin in each of the 200 capsules, and each capsule also contains bioperin, which doubles the effectiveness of the curcumin, and each jar is only $34.95. Call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Curcumin 98 is getting rave reviews across the board, and you just may add your voice to those who are singing the praises of Curcumin 98. Call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829 and order your Curcumin 98 today.
So, Janice, where are you and Jim going on vacation this summer?
Definitely somewhere with a beach, though who knows if our feet will even touch the sand.
That reminds me, Janice, have you figured out how to talk to Jim about his problem?
No, I want to, but men can be so sensitive.
Well, it's only going to get worse. Remember, I was going through the same thing with Dan. Then I found Mycocide NS.
What's Mycocide NS?
Mycocide NS kills the germs that can cause fungal infections. It worked great for Dan. He had the worst-looking thick yellow toenails. Now his nails look clear and healthy.
Do I need a prescription?
No, you can get Mycocide NS antifungal treatment in the foot care aisle at any drugstore or major retailer.
And it really worked?
Yep, it worked on me, too. I had some white discolorations on my toe. I just applied Mycocide NS daily. I didn't even have to remove my nail polish.
Sounds easy. I can start planning our beach getaway.
Yeah, Mycocide definitely gave us the confidence to bare our feet again.
Pick up Mycocide MS at drugstores and major retailers. Look for a free bonus gift in each box.
Are you concerned about the high cost of prescription drugs? Since January of 2006, RxDrugCard.com members have saved an average of $33 per prescription filled. That's over 46% savings. The average savings for generic drugs was over 71%. RxDrugCard.com is the only major discount prescription drug plan that offers a price lookup page, so you can get an idea of your discounted price before you enroll. RxDrugCard.com is for anyone who pays for their own prescriptions. There are no age restrictions, all prescriptions are covered, and 95% of all pharmacies in the U.S. participate, including Walmart, Walgreens, CVS Pharmacy, and many more. With RxDrugCard.com, you will save immediately with no messy forms or paperwork. Membership fees start at only $4.50 per month and include a 30-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Visit us at www.rxdrugcard.com or call us at 888-216-2461. That's 888-216-2461. Do it today.
America, land of the free. Right.
Welcome back to the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. Davon Kleist is or was at the Kansas City Airport. He's on his way home right now. And what a mess. Security alert, we're up to orange or red, we're not quite sure. Maybe sort of orangish red, I think. In the UK it's red for sure. But you can't take anything on board because there's a bunch of bad guys out there. And what was that statement they made? Something about their, something about their religion. We can't tell you anything about them, but they have something about their religion. Oh, come on. How cryptic can you be? We can't figure that one out. But they did assure us, Scotland Yard assured us, that this one is the real deal. And then, of course, we must give credit to Homeland Security for the brilliance that they displayed by saying, we don't know what we don't know. Well, it's probably pretty obvious you don't know by now. That stolen laptop, by the way, that contained all that transportation data, 133,000 drivers and pilots' records, including, and don't you notice that they never steal laptops without Social Security numbers. Think about that. Isn't this interesting? The only time that you steal a laptop is if it's got a Social Security number on it. 133,000 Social Security numbers were stolen last month from the Department of Transportation. The people will be notified that their Social Security numbers have been stolen. The stolen computer included information for more than 80,000 commercial driver's licenses issued in the Miami-Dade, Florida area. The data included driver's license, Social Security numbers, they keep mentioning that one over and over again, date of birth. It also contained records on pilot's licenses and driver's licenses. Now, you know what I'd love to see is someday I might believe the news if they carried a story. Ladies and gentlemen, we have to report that a laptop has been stolen with all the home addresses of Homeland Security, CIA, FBI, and every local department of law enforcement in this country. The chiefs of police had their driver's license numbers stolen, their Social Security numbers stolen. Then I might believe the news, but it's always all the little slaves that get theirs stolen. Have you noticed that? Pretty interesting. Thea, I would like to take a phone call, or two or three. If you would like to call in, we're going to take a couple of phone calls to see what you're thinking today, because I know this is really upsetting people. 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. And before we get to while you're calling in, there's a bombshell court ruling on veterans that have more than one VA claim pending. This is one of those I don't believe it stories that makes you so angry. Well, right now, according to VAWatchdog.org, and I want to thank Jerry Berry for sending this to us, when the VA acts on one claim but does not address the other claims, the other claims are now going to be deemed denied. Let me explain that to you. Let's say you have a claim because you were in, you fell out of the back of a pickup truck while you were in the military. I mean, it was on duty, and it was because the guy couldn't drive it correctly, and it was their fault. So you have a claim for a screwed-up arm. You have a claim for loss of hearing because you fell on your ear. You have a claim for a head injury. Well, let's say they deny the head injury, and so the other two claims are now going to be denied also. What are they trying to do? Are they trying to create unrest in this country? Well, this is a new case decided on July 27th by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the federal court, and it contains this bombshell. The federal circuit held that where the veteran files more than one claim with the RO at the same time, and the RO's decision acts favorably or unfavorably on one of the claims but fails to specifically address the other one, the second claim is denied. How dare you? How dare you always file multiple claims? We'll be right back after this 1 minute, 10 second break. Hopefully we got a couple of phone calls. Stay tuned.
Do you know the truth about breast cancer? Do you realize that the race for the cure is over? The best kept secret in the world today is that now it is possible to kill cancer without personal suffering, mutilation, and poisoning of your entire system. Now, it's cancer's turn to die with Lays Med Inc.'s patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at a physician's office. Star War technology at its best. For more information, call 702-953-0267 or visit www.laysmedinc.com or call 702-953-0267.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
There are many people asking questions. There are many people.
Welcome back to the Power Hour. Yeah, Dave is gone today. That's why, we're doing lots of news, and I'm going to take a couple of phone calls. In this next hour, we're going to be talking to a man who eats clay. I'm not kidding you. Rand Nashinsky is going to be joining us. He's been eating clay for more than 7 years. I bet it's even more than that. He's a writer, and he is very well-versed in alternative, integrative types of things that we like to cover on this program. And I know you'd like to be talking about the New World Order and we're all going to die by Friday. But you know what? We're going to talk about we're going to feel better by Friday if you eat clay. So we're going to talk about the clay cure in this next hour. Stay tuned. You'll join us after the break. Let's go to Joe in Maryland. Joe, what's on your mind? What are you thinking?
I think that we're in a heck of a mess in this USA.
Yeah, buddy.
I've got some chatter. You do know the reason why all of these computers are conveniently being stolen, don't you?
Help me understand.
This is just chatter. I mean, this is just, you know, just my way of thinking here. It's for the list, you know, the red, the blue, and the green list.
Oh, okay.
This is what I've heard. I mean, you know, like I said, this is just chatter, but that's mm-hmm. what I've heard. Can't prove, can't deny, but anyway.
Well, that's interesting. Well, I thank you for that information. You know, the person that put out the red, blue, green stuff, I have never been able to get any kind of good feeling about that, and that's only my own personal opinion, which is why I never talk about it. Now, do I think that there are, you know, the dangerous people out there? Of course there are, because, you know, they let us know that there are, because that they have a list of alleged terrorists, and they've got probably lists of alleged patriots, too, and list of alleged, you know, homeschoolers and everything else.
Well, it's been verified, but like I said, I haven't seen it, but, you know, it has been verified, but like I said, that's hearsay, too. So
okay. Well, thank you
anyway.
Very much.
Okay,
thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate your calling in today. Fred in Philadelphia, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Joyce.
Hi there.
Hi. There's a something that I want to bring to your listeners' attention. The whole issue of false flag events or covert action has really been settled in stories stretching over the last 50 years. I mean, in regular responsible journalist stories, the example in foreign countries of our government acting to fund political and or terrorist groups has already been settled.
That's right.
So the whole issue now is how is it being worked now in this current period? Now,
well, give us an answer to that. How do you think it is being funded
or
handled?
Well, what you have is you have a delegation of, let's say, in a covert action, you have a delegation of a bombing being basically being hired out to a small group, but the group that's actually in charge is a CIA funded group. For example, the Washington Post covered a huge bombing in Lebanon in 85 that killed more than 80 people, and you know, that really had to be well funded because you didn't have those kind of bombs that could do that. It was very, very rare that you could have a bomb.
That's right. The technical expertise and the actual ability to do it. You're absolutely right.
Right, the whole story basically was that the CIA funded a group in Lebanon to carry out a bombing of a cleric.
Yes.
And you know, basically nothing changes, Joyce, because you have the same violence against the people and their leaders over there are these religious leaders. If these people want to have religious leaders of that type, they're allowed to have religious leaders of that type. They're also their political
leaders.
Well,
if the U.S. approves of it, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you very much. I've got to move, Fred. We're going to the break, and then we're going to have Ron Nashinsky joining us. I just wanted to add that the United States tripled their sales of weapons to the Middle East in 1990. Tripled! I mean, that's gazillions of dollars. Tripled our sales to the Middle East. Yeah, we were selling to everybody over there. Guess what? They're now saying, oh, my goodness, they have weapons. We'll be right back after this 3-minute break. Stay tuned. Hi, this is Joy Schmiley, and most of you already know how Miracle 2 products can be used in the garden to control pests, help your flowers and vegetables absorb nutrients, and promote growth. Most of you already know how it cleans around the house without harsh chemicals or toxins, cutting through grease and leaving your hands soft and healthy. Most of you already know how the moisturizing soap and neutralizer leaves your hair and skin feeling fresh and clean. And for those of you who've never tried Miracle 2, you owe it to yourself to find out why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap is a miracle. Call 8-